It's time for Twit. You might be wondering why my head keeps coming off. I'm just really excited about our panel this week on Twit. Horace Dediu, who I admire immensely from Asimcoe, is here. Perhaps one of the most astute commentators on what's going on in the tech world. He'll join John C. Dvorak and me. Oh, and another smart guy, Mark Millian. It's going to be fun. Stay tuned. Twit is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 395, recorded March 3rd, 2013. It's not blue, it's bluish. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Twit. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT3. And by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users from anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. And boy, I'm excited about this panel today. Starting with John C. Dvorak to my right of channeldvorak.com. He's got, this is your new, this pistol thing. Is that your new?
Yeah. You like, know, a kid got kicked out of kindergarten for
doing that.
That,
I know. Isn't that sad?
It's pathetic.
The terrorists won. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, they won. Yeah, they did.
There's a guy, he's a travel blogger, got kicked off United Airlines because he took a picture of his seat.
What?
He took a picture of his
seat. I've taken pictures in the plane all the time.
The flight attendant took umbrage. He said, what do you
was
mean?
He, he wasn't taking a picture of her seat,
no,
as it
he
were.
Thought, she thought no? maybe he was taking a picture of her. Anyway, she took umbrage. He said, I'm not a terrorist. They threw him off the flight.
Well, you don't say I'm not a terrorist.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The terrorist won. Because if you can't, I mean, if we live in such a paranoid world that that normal common sense is shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they won. That's what they're trying to, that's what terrorism is about.
They're laughing. They're laughing in the caves they live in.
Mark, Jesus. Mark Millian is also here. Bloomberg Business Week. Nice to have you back, Mark.
Good to be here.
Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Your t-shirt says Frightened Rabbit.
Frightened
Rabbit, yeah. Is that a band?
Yeah, a good rock band. They're coming here in a couple weeks.
All right. I thought it was a statement about your emotional state or something.
No, I'm, I feel good.
Okay, good. And I'm really pleased to welcome, well, I was pleased to welcome both of you. I don't want to imply that I'm not thrilled to have you guys, but we've never had Horace Dediu on before, and I'm very excited about having him on. We talk about his Asimcoe blog all the time. He's a great analyst of what's going on, particularly Apple. Horace, welcome to Twit. It's good to have you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very, very happy to be here and thankful of the opportunity.
We were talking about the show. You were an analyst at Nokia for 8 years and have taken to the blog world to do something similar. Do you own, you write a lot about Apple, but it's not just Apple, right?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, Apple is only a sort of a metaphor, actually. I think it's a what I'd like to really focus on is innovation. And I went to business school. I studied under Christensen, Clay Christensen, the author of The Innovator's Dilemma, and several books thereafter. And, you know, that really inspired me to think about what does it mean to really change the world? Because technology is one thing, but really making it into a commercial success is what changes the world. And so for me, the whole question in my mind has been ever since about 2000, how do companies succeed being serial innovators? Not just once, not just twice, but repeating the process over and over again. And in that sense, there were very few examples of that happening. We've seen it only with Sony, perhaps, back in the 70s and 80s. We've seen it with maybe IBM back in the 50s and 60s. But today, the only real company that's been able to do this more than a couple of times has been Apple. And so really, I like to take it apart, figure out what makes it tick. And then actually, hopefully, others can be more like Apple. I recently wrote a story saying, why is it that people like to copy Apple's products but don't want to copy the company itself, the product-making engine? Sometimes I call it, you know, it's like making a blockbuster manufacturing factory. You know, why don't you want to own that factory? Few people actually do, and that's a mystery to me. And so explaining the process of innovation, what it takes to manage innovation, Apple is a great way to do so. And that's why I focus a lot on it. If they were to lose their way, certainly I think we could move on and talk about other companies as well. And there are many times when I do actually dive deep into some other companies. I've done Samsung before. I've done Google, analyzing Google's Android business, for example. I've looked, of course, at Nokia for many years. I've looked at Microsoft as well. And I sometimes even do a comparison of all of the above on one sort of massive in-depth chart, trying to understand what makes them similar and what makes them different.
It does raise the question, why, if Apple is a roadmap, a game plan for innovation and successive innovation, why more people don't copy them? Did Samsung copy Apple? It seems like the courts thought they did.
Well, the product copying is one thing. I mean, certainly Apple does its share of that as well. And I think that's commonplace in the industry, actually, for many decades, that you build on sort of the building blocks that came before. But the question really is about the business practices of Apple. So how do they make products? And another way, let me take Apple off the table for a minute and talk about another company that actually has a repeatable process. And that is actually Pixar. Pixar figured out how to make blockbusters. And not just one or two, but every movie is a blockbuster.
One after the other, yep.
Yeah, and there are limits to how that happens. For example, they can't make one every year. They can't make three every year. They have to make them after a couple of years, and it takes a lot of time. And they can't scale that process. So you can't turn Pixar into 1,000 movies a year type of business, each one being a blockbuster. And they know their limits. They know they can only make one every couple of years because the number of people needed, the time needed, the incubation period, and the refinement, the polishing, all that work it takes to make one of these massive, massive successes from Pixar is essentially embodied in that business model. And that's what they were purchased by Disney for. Now, the question is, can you scale that innovation process to the technology space? Is that what Apple is doing? How do you take it into other industries, even beyond technology, you know, consumer products or what have you? That's really the mystery out there. And I'm trying to figure it out. I'm not sure I have it yet, but
it's a really apt question. It's one thing to copy the product, but that's not the chain.
Yeah, in fact, Tim Cook was just asked this at the conference. Was it 2 weeks ago with the Goldman Sachs conference? Right. You know, what makes Apple innovative? And he went on about the team he has and the fact that they're integrated and they know how to do software and hardware and services as well. And that's certainly part of the story, that they have integration and they have great staff. But the question again comes up, why doesn't anybody else do that? Why Right. doesn't anybody become integrated? Why doesn't anybody hire the same team? In fact, you could probably poach them if you wanted to and you had enough money. The answer is that it's actually probably more to this magic, more to the special sauce than we are led to believe. One of the clues out there actually is that they have an internal division or something called Apple University. Don't confuse that with iTunes University. This is Apple University. It's an internal training or MBA program, if you will, for their own employees, their own management, to learn how to be an Apple manager. And the question of how do you teach that and what is a curriculum? They brought in some pretty high-powered people from business schools like Yale and Berkeley to run it. In fact, the head of Yale's business school took over that division and became the head of HR at Apple. Imagine the head of HR at Apple is a top academic from Yale. Not something you would see in any other
company.
No,
I mean, he's obviously not prosecuting sexual harassment cases. He's doing something else. There was an interesting point counterpoint between John Gruber Friday and Tim Wu at The New Yorker. Mm-hmm. Tim wrote an interesting article that says that open beats closed all the time, and that Apple, which is kind of the notorious counterexample, is a closed system. He wrote a column saying Apple needs somebody like Steve Jobs, and that Apple without Jobs is falling back to earth.
Well, does anybody seriously think that Pixar would be anything without John Lasseter?
Well, that's the question.
Isn't it just cloning Pixar? In fact, if you clone Pixar and took Lasseter out, which is kind of what you're suggesting, I really doubt if it would be successful.
Well, that's the crucial question, and I want to put this to you this way. There's a lot of success stories and failures, not just in business, but in all kinds of human conditions, human enterprises, whether it's wars, government, you name it. I mean, who was responsible for the success of the U.S. Army in Europe? Some would say it was Patton. Some would say there was the system of the U.S. Army, or some would say that there was a process at work. There's always a combination of great people and the process, and you cannot say that it's only the individual that's responsible. That's not giving credit at all to all the other individuals involved. There's also not giving any credit to the fact that there's some magic involved in the way the thing is put together. It's like telling people, why do you have a great piece of software? It's like, well, because I have great input, because I have great algorithms, and because I have a great way of putting it all together and making a design. So that's the thing about business, is that there's too much emphasis, I think, on the sort of magician in charge, not as much on understanding the process that is working behind the scenes. That doesn't get a lot of credit. I'm not saying, however, that process is everything, and that if you took the great leadership out, it would still work. That's not true either. But you have to pay attention to process. You have to pay attention to the organizational structures that they put in place. I call these, actually Christensen initially called these, the resources, the processes, and the priorities of a company. Resources are things which walk out the door every day. Processes are things that take years and sometimes decades to put together. And priorities is why you do certain things. Priorities, for example, are very, very hard to change, almost never change in the company. That's the business model. That's the entire what they call the DNA. And so I don't focus so much on the DNA, but I do try to understand the processes involved. And it's interesting that processes that are tuned to innovation are actually quite rare. Most processes companies use are trying to actually maintain what they already have, not to create something new or to destroy what they have in order to replace it. So to step back a little bit to this debate about open and closed, what I find interesting is the analogy of open and closed is very similar to another analogy of integrated and modular. Integrated is very analogous to being so-called closed, and a company like Ford, which made the Model T in the 1920s, was using essentially an integrated approach, and that they would really own the entire value chain. It wasn't open in the sense they would allow its suppliers to give them certain pieces, and then they would provide a standard interface for things like parts and engines and so on. Rather, they chose to design everything themselves. Now, what happened is, later on, General Motors had a completely different approach, and they were much more successful because they wouldn't create just a single model, but they were able to create a huge multitude of models, and they were able to do so very rapidly, and they could make a new car every year, which was unheard of before then. And they had a flexible manufacturing model to allow this to happen. So what we saw happen in the auto industry already by the 1930s is that a switch from so-called integrated to more modular was the way to go. So as the industry matured, it flipped from being integrated to being modular. And this happens over and over again. But when you come up with something new, something completely different that the market has never seen before, you've got to go about it in an integrated way. This is why when we first saw computers, they were integrated, they became modular. When the computers then became smaller, they started out integrated and then became modular. Mm-hmm. When the web came, it started out being integrated, in the sense that you had to have, you know, the same company building the browsing and the same company building the operating system, like we saw with Microsoft. And then Google came and Firefox came and so on. So we're seeing this process over and over again. So you can't say that open always wins. Open wins in the end of the late stages of an industry once it has reached a maturity where modularity actually works. And that solves a different problem for the user than just working. It has to work in a much more expansive way, like it has to work as a convenience rather than just utility.
But look at how fast.
I want to say he's got a great future ahead of him as a consultant. I've heard all this kind of thing before, and this is a beauty.
Well, but that's what management wants to hear, is it's not the person, it's the process, that there's DNA you can communicate. We're going to see the results of that great experiment at Apple because the person's gone. The process and DNA exists.
We saw it already once when Steve Jobs left the first time. Spindler actually multiplied the income by 10.
Really?
Not Spindler, I mean Scully. Yeah. And then when Scully left because he couldn't keep this pace up, this torrid pace, and everyone said, well, we should be going even bigger.
Right.
They started bringing in the third generation and fourth generation, Spindler, and then the guy
Emilio,
and the thing started caving, and that's how it ended up, process or no process. It doesn't hold up unless you have talent at the top. I think it's great, the idea of having a machine, but it's still people more than anything. And that's what all the investors do. There's not a VC in the world that would invest in a process.
They invest in the founders, don't they? Yeah.
It seems like the product generations are even shortening to maturity now at this point where, you know, Apple was able to control personal computers with the Mac for, you know, it seemed maybe like 8 years when the first Macintosh came out. Following the Apple II. And now, you know, we're 5-6 years into the modern touchscreen smartphone, and Samsung is clearly the dominant force. It's not Apple. So Apple's new innovator dilemma seems to be, you know, they have to create a new product category. Yeah,
it's all about the watch now, right?
Well, Sam, one thing, by the way, just to note, Apple was not the leader in the smartphone space except for one or two quarters in its whole history. It was Nokia that was the leader for many, many years.
John was
in the
big
US.
E71 fan. You were a Nokia fan.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah. BlackBerry was big in the United States. So really, Apple never was number one, except I think the only category they've ever been number one is MP3 players. So
funny when you think about that.
It's true, though. I mean, they may be number one in terms of profit and somewhat in sales, but that is also potentially transient. The thing to note is that this is not the game they play, the volume game. So it's unusual, in fact, that they get to this kind of number that they have today. But that's the crucial dilemma. When you are integrated, typically you cannot serve billions of people. It's just very, very hard to scale.
Let's take a break because there's more to talk about. Horace Dedios, it's so great to have you. Thank you from ASEMCO.com. Mark Millian, Bloomberg Businessweek, John C. Dvorak, Channel Dvorak.
NoAgendaShow.com. By the way, I have discs for anyone who wants the Best of January show.
You're giving out discs? Or will you be selling them as people
No,
in the lobby?
They get free discs.
All right.
Somebody sent them to us. And
you know, we should do that. We should have a little table, a little card table out in the lobby. You could sell
That'd
discs
be perfect.
As people go.
Yeah, I can sell a...
good. Yeah, there we go. John will be passing those out. He's a big fan of a No Agenda show. Now he's just going to leave them in a stack. Boy, there's a rush. Don't all
get them at once.
Rush over.
We're dropping most of them off into Korea. In Korea.
No Agenda show is huge in Korea.
No.
With, like, the little parachutes?
No, have you been to a Hankook supermarket down in Sunnyvale? It's a Korean place. It's fantastic. Yeah. If you've never been there, you should go.
We should go. We're going to be down there tomorrow.
You should check it out. It's huge. Well, they don't have – they have – you know, we get the free newspapers on the free stuff and there's little bins and stuff. In the Koreans, I guess, don't do any of that. They just hand out discs.
Oh,
there's
wow.
Stacks of all kinds of discs.
Like AOL.
Yeah, it's like
– yeah, exactly. AOL. This is what we've got to buy AOL discs.
63 hours. Yes.
So John and I actually are going down to San Jose. We're going to be speaking at the Radio Inc. Convergence Conference. This is going to be really interesting. We're going in front of a lot of radio executives to tell them why their business is doomed.
Why they're doomed.
Yeah.
And we have so much respect for
Maybe
radio
you can
executives.
Some of those discs. I
will. I'm going to bring a pile.
Here's the future. No Agenda Show.
And I will throw them into the audience. Maybe I can.
You might. Maybe that'll slow them down as they attack us.
Yeah, that could be. They're giving us all of 35 minutes to do a keynote. Two of us.
Yeah.
So we'll get,
yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we're going to ad lib the whole thing.
We were originally scheduled to be the keynote at the beginning of the conference, and I noticed.
Yeah, they bumped us with somebody else.
They moved us down the list. I think they figured out finally that, you know, these guys really are trying to kill radio. And and now Tim Draper of Draper, Jervis, and Fitcher.
Yeah, and Draper knows nothing, rhinoceros. By the way. I know Draper.
Yeah.
He knows nothing about new media or radio.
But he's a visionary and venture capitalist behind many of the top brands you know today. And then we got these Statler and Waldorf of tech, Dvorak and Laporte to talk after that.
What time is his think?
I'm sure he's at 1. We should go see him.
Yeah, and then we can blast it. And he won't have any retort. He'll leave.
Draper's very entertaining on stage.
Now, Draper's okay. I've heard him speak before, but he'll leave right afterwards immediately.
Yeah, because he doesn't.
So then we can say whatever we want.
After he does his little song on stage. Have you seen him speak on stage where he does a song?
No, I have not seen the song.
Pretty much every keynote that he does.
Oh, I wonder when he started that.
We should get a little song.
No, I'm not going to sing a song. Do a lip sync something.
Okay. All right. We're gonna take a break. If you missed, we had a good week on Twitter. Don't you think, Chad, this was a particularly unusually good week?
Yeah.
No idea.
This week we did lots of things.
Let's take a look. Maybe there's something you missed, and then right after that we'll find out what Tom Merritt's coming up in the week ahead.
We could keep talking about how good.
Oh, you're not ready yet.
This week has been.
Okay, why don't you rewind the tape?
It has been a really good week.
He was live. Tom Merritt.
No, we're talking about the promo. Tom's live, of course.
Yeah. No, this promo. Oh, wait. Darn it.
What do you think of the house ad, John?
I never put the house ad in this early. I thought I'd give it some
you know, see, you're jinxed. It's cursed.
It's cursed.
I knew it.
It's my fault. I was distracted. Here we go. Okay, so this week, real exciting stuff, everyone. Take a look.
Previously on Twit. Triangulation.
To get elected, you need a lot of money, and the best way to get a lot of money is to ask rich people for it, and the best way to get them to continue giving you money is to pass laws that make them richer, and they get to use that money to get you reelected. Lather, rinse, repeat, and 3 or 4 election cycles later, it's a felony to find out whether or not your phone is spying on you.
Matt Break Weekly.
From that bastion of journalistic verisimilitude, the New York Post comes this exclusive. NYPD forms dedicated team to catch thieves who steal iPhones and iPads.
Before you buy.
I took some video of my dog, Tibbs, running around in the grass. And I also did some low light inside shots. And this camera performed really well.
All about Android.
The fact that you have in your marketing you need to name something truly unlimited just speaks to the fact that you're lying. No. Like, you're lying. And, like, now we know.
Twit.
Now, where'd I put my Android?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things happening in the week ahead. We'll keep an eye on for news on tech news today. Starting Monday, March 4th, the Launch Festival is happening in San Francisco. Also, that same day kicks off the Freedom to Connect Conference in Silver Springs, Maryland. Tuesday, March 5th begins CeBIT in Hanover, Germany. Friday, March 8th, South by Southwest Interactive kicks off in Austin, Texas. And Saturday, March 9th, the Boston Code Camp 19 happens at the New England Research and Development, or NERD, campus of Microsoft. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Tom Merritt. I don't ever run that at the beginning of the show, and I just thought for a change, we should give them a chance at the beginning of the show before everybody's tuned out.
What? This is the kind of thing that makes them tune out.
Oh, darn, I didn't think of that. Our show today brought to you by ShareFile.com. This is a great solution I have really been using the heck out of. And no matter what your business, you probably will want to, too. As you know, in business, effective communication is everything. Unfortunately, these days, sending email with attachments is not done. You get the bounce backs. You lack security. Email is not secure. It's like sending a postcard. So I've been using, and I recommend for any business, ShareFile.com. If you go to ShareFile.com, you can see why ShareFile is such a great difference. Citrix understands the challenge of business, and they built a better solution for business. That's why millions of accountants, lawyers, and other business professionals rely on ShareFile. Very easy for anyone to use. You can send files of almost any size securely. You can track the progress of your files. Notifications are automatically sent when the files are open, and you can control who has access by using tools like password protection. You can even sign and edit files for streamlined collaboration. Plus, with ShareFile, you can access files anywhere. Laptops, smartphone, tablet. I want you to try ShareFile free. I've been so happy with it. I'd like to give you a chance to try it for 30 days. Visit ShareFile.com. You don't need a credit card. There's nothing to lose. Just click the microphone and enter TWIT. You will want to select your industry because ShareFile customizes for a really big number of industries, and that's one of the things I particularly like about it. For instance, HIPAA compliant if you're in the medical industry. So choose your industry, use the TWIT offer code, and enjoy ShareFile free for 30 days. Look at this. Engineering, planning, event planning, photography, printing, publishing, software, tech services. I love it. ShareFile.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Did we talk about it on the show, taking the picture of the seat? Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was that on the show? I thought maybe it was before the show.
I can't remember now. Can't remember.
That's the problem with talking
before
at all.
The show. All right, I got a story. Evernote gets hacked.
Yeah.
And Evernote did something very aggressive that maybe, I don't know, this is the new thing to do. LastPass did this when they got hacked. Twitter did it when they got hacked. They said immediately, we were hacked. It happened February 28th. Within a day or two, they said, we've been hacked. They got names email addresses and passwords, but our password database was properly encrypted using hashes and salt. It's a heavily salted hash, which is a delicious breakfast.
It is, especially with an egg.
So even though there really was no risk, they said no data was compromised, no user data was compromised, but we're going to reset everybody's password just in case. And this is what Twitter did.
Yeah, that's annoying.
It's the new thing to do. Just in case, even though there's no harm done, we're going to reset everybody's password. Do you think that's overreaction? I mean, or is this now the new norm?
I agree it's annoying, but I think it's probably good security hygiene. So, you know,
admit everything. Because banks for years have just pretended nothing was going on.
They'd rather have them.
We weren't hacked? What's that?
That's why they need the excuse to charge 18% interest.
Yeah.
Hash passwords can be decrypted. If there was, if the hackers were targeting a few people in particular, it's probably likely that over time they could decrypt those passwords. So,
Because of rainbow tables and so forth, merely hashing is insufficient. But hashing with enough salt is pretty secure. It's unlikely that they're going to get. Anyway, they've reset the passwords. The real security issue has nothing to do with that. It has to do with if I use the same password on Evernote that I used on 15 other sites, if they did get my password, that might be more of a problem.
But that would assume that they would know what the sites are that you're...
Well, they try them all.
But they don't know... Well, maybe.
If you use monkey123 as a password, which I know you do...
I do.
and then I get that password through Evernote. Maybe I didn't get any Evernote data, but now I can try logging into Twitter, Hotmail...
Yeah, but I don't use the same username
because,
on everything.
Well, I can guess your username.
What?
Dvorak@dvorak.org?
No.
Yes.
No.
No. John@dvorak.org?
Well, that's my
John
email.
John C. Dvorak? Well, but a lot of times it's just your email address.
I don't actually...
to get spammed after the show goes onto the downloads.
I never get spammed.
He gets no spam.
I get no spam.
It's a remarkable...
That's because I use a system.
Feat of nature.
CTYME.com. It's a plug for the service.
You haven't plugged them in a long time. That's
I just did.
What does that stand for?
Computer time.
Computer time, web hosting.
Web hosting. Anyway, I admire Evernote for being aggressive about this. I just wonder, this is what everybody does right now. Yeah, it says I get no spam on it. Computer time web hosting.
With a picture of John's
face. And by the way, website, I just want to point out that Computer Time website, they haven't redesigned that since 1992.
He's a traditionalist.
Yeah.
I
haven't seen rainbow bars.
He doesn't have the cat running across the bottom like he used to, but the rest of it is
good.
There's
actually the fish with feet right next to the
church.
Church of reality.
Oh, yeah, that's his church, yeah.
Well. CTYME.
The great thing about CTYME.com is that Mark, the host... What happened?
I'm just showing the site.
Oh, yeah. The great thing about this guy...
I'm surprised it's not cycling rainbows.
And you know what he said? Really he took it off.
Yeah.
So he will not give the government anything.
He already said that.
Yeah, he says it. He'll tell you.
I don't care.
He says, screw it. Throw me in jail. I am not going to give that. Because he does all the sites or all these radical organizations.
You missed a bit, though. This little email icon would be really cool if the door was opening and then mail was flying into it and the door was closed. That would have been really cool.
Yeah, I've talked to Mark about this. He refuses to change it because it's more secure this way, the way he sees it.
It's like, you know what? Steve Gibson, same
no
thing.
No Java.
Steve Gibson, same thing. No JavaScript,
nope.
No Java.
You're asking for trouble.
I write everything in assembly language.
Yeah,
is his motto.
That's the way this guy is, too.
Yeah. No, God bless him. Thank God. These are the proto-geeks, the original geeks.
Yeah, he's been around forever.
The ones that started it all. Does he have a neck beard?
I haven't seen him for a while.
Bradley Manning pleads guilty.
After he's beaten enough.
Yeah. He says, it's actually an interesting article from Yochai Benkler at MIT in the New Republic, The Dangerous Logic of the Bradley Manning Case. Is it? All right. Just saying he did it. He pleaded guilty. He says he had good reason for doing it. He was really dismayed by what the Army was up to. He felt it was a patriotic thing to be a whistleblower.
Well, it started, apparently, the last story I heard was that he had known that they had tried to do a Freedom of Information Act to get that helicopter video, which is the first thing he leaked
right.
out.
And that was,
the guy saying, hey, look, there's another guy walking around. Let's kill him.
Taking pot shots
and
at people on the street.
Shooting guys. Yeah. Oh, this guy's going to help the other guy. Let's kill him. So he thought that was abhorrent, and so he decided to just throw that video out there.
Benkler says the prosecution case seems designed quite simply to terrorize future national security whistleblowers. That's probably true.
I'd like to know why he
example of him.
Why he couldn't shut up about it. He didn't get caught for the helicopter thing, and so he says, well, if they didn't catch me on this, I'll go do something else. Then he bragged about it.
But they're bringing charges like aiding the enemy, punishable by death. They're looking.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. So it's a capital offense.
It's not going to happen.
It reminds me a little bit of the Aaron Schwartz case, where just this prosecutorial
overreaching. Well, they did manage to kill him.
Overreaching, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to be an enemy of the state.
God, no. Heaven forfend. That's the lesson, isn't it?
We discuss this on No Agenda Show every
I'm sure you do.
Thursdays
I don't know why I'm
Sunday.
Even bringing it up.
Just you shouldn't be
stop bringing listening
it up.
To Twit. Go listen to No Agenda.
Well, we should need tech news.
Steve Mann, you know who he is, the MIT guy who for years wore computers around. He was the guy who really invented wearable computing. He's got some warnings.
I think I met him once.
Yeah, you couldn't miss him. I mean, back in 95, he's wearing this outfit around. It's it looks like he's carrying a Pentium 90 PC.
Yeah.
On his waist.
Either that or a Royal typewriter.
And he's got an antenna on his head.
Yeah.
But he's talking to Google about Project Glass, and he says, be careful because you can. I've been, for a long time, I've been saying Project Glass is like Steve Martin in The Jerk, those glasses that, remember he invented the handle that you pull the glasses off and he made millions of dollars until people sued him because they all ended up cross-eyed because of the handle? This guy says that could happen. He says, training people to look into this screen
he
has
might be
more
right.
long-term consequences to your vision than you might think.
I think it's possible.
Google could end up with a bunch of cross-eyed users.
Just like the guys
just
that work
like
there.
Just like the jerk. Yeah. He said,
stepping
for instance,
on each other's joke.
No, because I had a different joke.
Yeah.
I said just like the jerk. You said just like the guys that work at Google.
Yeah.
Should we have a vote
nastier.
On who was better?
Mine was I don't know.
He talks about the vision scientist who did the experiment of wearing a prism. His name George Stratton. That on his glasses, this was in the 1890s, that turned the world upside down. You know, we actually do see the world upside down, but the brain reverses it. So Stratton put these glasses on to turn it around. He said within 2 days he adjusted; it was completely normal. Everything looked upright to him.
Yeah.
So you adjusted very quickly, but after he took the glasses off, it took a long time for his vision to return to normal. He said he called everything. He said his vision had a bewildering air.
I bet it did.
This guy, man says that in fact, this has exactly been my experience that you can adjust fairly quickly, but to readjust after wearing something like Google Glass for a long period of time could be very challenging. He wears glasses that let him see the world in HDR, which is kind of interesting, with video feeds. Mm. Boy, we're really getting the conversation going on this.
It's a,
All right. Well, let's talk about glass. Are you guys getting planning to get one?
I'm on the list. You know, I got the little paperweight, number 737.
The glass.
They haven't charged me yet. $1,500. But I'm completely skeptical about wearable computing of all kinds, including Apple Watches and
my son says this is going to be the greatest thing. He says if you were, well, he's like your age, the greatest thing because you can do all kinds of things with it. I said, what? And he could, you know, well.
Yeah, what? Take video of your balloon trip.
You can take videos and demand or I don't know what.
Horace, isn't this stimulated by the intense demand on companies to come up with the next big thing, whether people want it or not?
Well, it is to some degree. The problem I see, though, is that we're trying to see what the technology can deliver and trying to really just find the problems with the technology. It's like you have a tool and you're trying to find the solution or the problem that it can solve.
Exactly.
And
it's backwards.
The right way to do it is sort of, let me put it this way. Watching the video, I got the impression that this solves the problem of people who are very, very active physically. Like, you know, and how many of us really have these sort of needs of
being. It's too much trouble to hold the camera while I'm jumping out of an airplane, so I have some glasses that will do that.
Right.
For
me. And there are a lot of problems we have that are not solved. And these problems are usually basic things like, you know, I want to be feeling comfortable. I want to be somehow feeling that my family loves me. These are real problems. The idea of having more technology solving this idea of hyperactive lifestyles is not really the mainstream problem. I think the really innovation that's going to be rewarded will be on things like, well, let's convert our computers from being tools to being companions. Mm. Let's convert our computers from being utilitarian to being enlightening. These are human needs. It's like imagine hiring a computer to be your advisor, and it wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't think of the computer as you do today, but it would be sort of almost personified. That is the future, and I think that we're getting there bit by bit, and I think Google is as good a chance as anyone. But I think that the idea of technology as being packaged as a tool is passé, frankly. And I think we got to move on.
You know, I wrote a column recently about this, suggesting the possibility that this is actually just a joke. It's a hoax.
Well, it was. You know, what was it that Sergey said at TED? That it's emasculating
to look at your phone.
To look at your phone?
Yeah.
It makes it sound like a joke now.
Yeah, no, I know. I thought that was a very
good image. You girly man, you're looking at your phone. Yeah. You should be looking through glass.
He says you'll be rubbing an inanimate object.
You are girly.
Why would you be rubbing it all day, the object? You know, it's very suggestive.
I mean, maybe glass isn't even designed for a mainstream audience. Maybe it is designed for ex,
military
skaters and for.
Is this a special case of the innovator's dilemma that you become very successful, then you only design solutions for the 1%?
I mean, look at the Chromebook Pixel. Who is that for?
Another example.
That's less than 1%.
It's another one that's
$1,300.
It's not even the right aspect
computer.
Of any ratio
it's
that no
one. 3x2.
It's 3x2. It's crazy.
All right, Horace sounds like he wants to defend the Pixel.
No, it's in some ways it's the right approach. I mean, the idea of having a what we used to call, you remember, network computers, right? I mean, this is not a new idea.
But what if you design a solid gold thin client? Would that make it better somehow?
And how is it the right approach? It's a 3x2 aspect ratio thing that does nothing, and it's $1,300. It's overpriced. That's not the right approach. The right approach is cheap.
Well, exactly. they make cheap.
Yeah, that's what they should stick with. Why are they making a $1,300 netbook? Or whatever.
The disruptive thing to do would be to go in at the low end and make it available to people who don't have computers today. I think that's the job of smartphones to some degree. But if they wanted to really try to change the landscape of computing, they would have to probably solve the problem at the low end, not at $1,300.
I mean, these guys are not dumb. There must be a reason for glass. There must be a reason for the Pixel.
No.
Was there a reason for the Nexus Q?
The Q, there's another winner.
Ball you connect to your TV just because and it doesn't somebody, do
yeah, the Q is a good example. Just because they're not dumb doesn't mean that everything they do is they're not gods.
Oh, I don't know. I think Sergey's kind
the nicest
of
well, thing
he's
I
got
could
three
say,
jets, and maybe it makes a difference.
I mean, the only good thing you can imagine is that they're learning. Okay, so these are the types of products you do to kind of get your team working together and figure out how to make hardware.
Right.
But again, I'm you know, because it's actually harder to make cheap stuff than to make expensive stuff. One thing I kind of sometimes bring up is it's harder to engineer Fiat than it is to engineer a Ferrari.
Right.
You think about it, because the Ferrari, you're only going to make a couple of hundred of them. To engineer the Fiat, you got to work it out how it's going to be manufactured in huge quantities and sold to the dealer networks and serviced and so on. So that's a completely different problem. But you might actually start by building the Ferraris, because you're going to actually work with a small team, you're going to learn all the problems, and then you're going to scale and actually make the cheap stuff later. I don't know. That's the only nice thing I can say about this approach.
Is Chrome OS a success?
No.
I agree.
You could talk to some specific segments. You know, it reminds me of the Newton, actually. Which is certain segments made sense. For instance,
I don't know that the Newton never made sense to anybody.
Or the Slate, where the early stylus tablets made sense in certain vertical markets on the factory floor or maybe a physician.
Right.
It seems like the Pixel makes sense if you want to make a dashboard for a CEO. You don't want a cheesy netbook, but you don't want anything too sophisticated because the guy's a moron. But you want it to look nice. Like, it's a specialty product. Glass, similarly. I don't know. That's what it feels like to me. And I don't see that the Chrome OS has a market. There's a market in education for a $20 a month cheap laptop that the kid can't really get into trouble with. That's one use for it. But these are very specialized markets.
The Chrome OS always seems to be... first of all, they announced it like a year or two before it actually became available on any products. But the team always seems to be about a year or two behind every trend.
Right.
They released the original Chromebook a year after people stopped buying netbooks.
And they have the Chromebox.
Yeah, that's nice.
I have
one. It's like a Mac Mini with the Chrome OS on it.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
You know what most people do with these things? They put Linux on it. They say, okay, thanks.
Yeah, but you still need
thanks
some
for the
storage.
Hardware. I'm going to put Linux on it.
You need
storage. Yeah, then you don't have a lot of storage. That's right.
And I think the Pixel is coming out now, a year after people have lost interest in Ultrabooks.
Yeah. Well, this is an Ultrabook.
No,
this
Ultrabooks. Nice Ultrabook. To be honest, lost interest. I have one.
Yeah. I like little thin.
Is it a Chromebook?
No, an Ultrabook. Ultrabooks are different than Chromebooks.
I think Chromebooks is like a netbook. I think
concept.
Netbook is the word you're looking for.
No, it's not the same concept. There's a standalone machine.
Solid-state memory.
Yeah, but it's got a hard disk, as it were. It's got a solid-state hard disk. It's standalone. It's got Windows or runs Linux. And you can work with it without being hooked to the internet.
Actually, at this
point,
it's
a lot different.
After using Windows 8 on this Acer for a while, I wouldn't mind Chrome OS. It might be better.
Well, you're getting going to get you're
Windows
gonna
8
get a mouse shoulder the way you keep.
I know. I have to.
You keep poking at the thing.
I don't know.
You should run a classic desktop, whatever that thing is, and get rid of this.
Yeah, classic shell.
Yeah. You'll like it a lot better. You'll see.
So why is Sergey Brin going after... By the way, and this is the other thing that puzzles me about Chrome OS, because Google has a very credible operating system. It's called Android. It seems to be taking over the world.
I don't understand why they don't make a computer.
Make an Android computer.
Yeah.
Make a Pixel that runs Android. That would be something I'd buy.
Well,
you got 250,000
apps.
I don't think Andy Rubin is interested in the computer market.
So
I think it's
Andy that's keeping that from happening.
It's Andy? Andy Rubin?
Do you think Andy and Sergey are going to get in a fight because Sergey said that Andy's product is emasculating? I mean,
He's calling him out. He's calling Andy
company,
out for
this
being
a... This is a company that makes a lot of money on Android, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, he's calling tons.
And they also spent a lot of money on a phone company.
They bought Motorola.
Right, for the patents.
They don't, you know, even this is another
they
one.
Also
Google
make
said,
phones.
Google even said, who was it that said at Google? Was it Larry? Yeah, those Motorola phones are crap.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Their CFO in a presentation.
It was a CFO. Yeah, though we're not really that
they're
proud
not
of
really
what
up to
they're
our
not.
Standards
they're not really. What is with this company?
I don't know. They're weird. They're wacky.
I like it. They're different. You're standing around just, it says, I wonder if I have the video of Sergey saying this.
And he's wearing those things.
He thinks rubbing a featureless piece of glass is more emasculating than wearing the Borg glasses?
Yeah, the Borg. They always had those glasses.
These are very macho. He looks so macho.
He looks like a robot. Borg are not macho. They're disgusting. They're horrible beasts.
All right.
Onward.
Onward. Teens are tiring of Facebook. We find this out, in fact, from Facebook. So it starts with a post from, who was it that left Facebook? I don't have his name in front of me. You guys know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know anything about it. You know,
Blake Ross, the director of product at Facebook, quits.
Why?
Well, and this is my question. Was he making a joke? Because he said why. He posted a letter on his profile page, which he later took down, saying, I'm leaving to become a Forbes writer, which is a questionable career choice, but okay. I'm leaving because of Forbes writer. There, that makes more sense.
Because of Forbes writer.
Because a Forbes writer asked his son's best friend, Todd, if Facebook was still cool, and the friend said no, and plus none of his friends think so either, even Lila, who used to love it. And this journalism
is he
made
12?
Me...
12? What is this?
And this journalism, I think it's a joke. That's tongue-in-cheek.
Oh,
and this journalism made
it.
Me reconsider the long-term viability of the company. Now he says, no, I'm just trying new things. But and I think that this was a ham-handed like joke. But now everybody's saying, oh, maybe if Ross is leaving because his Facebook's no longer hip, maybe it's over. And Facebook even admitted in its 10K that it might be losing younger users. Is Facebook over? You're young.
Yeah, you're
Mark
young.
Million is our kid. Is our kid.
You mean do some tech support for you?
Yeah. Come on.
That's a good.
I can't figure out how to turn this off.
Is it got a switch?
Is it over for Facebook?
Well, Mark,
with kids,
we're waiting.
With the young
I'm gonna
people.
I'm going to go with no.
No, okay.
But social Tumblr? Networks do tend to be trendy.
Yeah, and Tumblr's huge with the young people.
Yeah, but used for a very different thing. Twitter is the same way. I mean, all of these can coexist
they
right
coexist.
Now, but
you don't leave one for the other. Right?
There's no
Adam Rifkin says Tumblr is Facebook 2.0.
Really?
Tumblr may already eclipse Facebook
that.
As the most popular social network among 13 to 25
year olds.
I
don't use either one, and I still
That's
don't.
That's because you're
it.
Not 13 to 25.
This is true.
You haven't seen that in a few years.
Well, I could see
what
it
do you
again
see? I use
if
Facebook.
I'm reincarnated. You use Facebook.
I use Facebook because I'm an old guy.
You use Tumblr.
I do use Tumblr.
Okay. Mark, you use Tumblr?
Minimally,
okay.
Someone in the chat room mentioned Snapchat, and I think that's
Snapchat's hot.
A credible competitor to Facebook for time. I mean, it's not going to become sort of the
Insta
phone
picture.
Book
that other
but didn't
one.
But didn't Facebook? Maybe Facebook felt the same way because Mark Zuckerberg stayed up late one night and wrote Poke
and it
rewrote
hasn't,
Poke, and it hasn't really it
hasn't done much.
He's done, yeah. Stayed up late one night.
He did. He wrote it. You know, that was the funny thing. Is he says anyway.
He can code.
It. He can code. He's proven it. Boy, this is a great week for tech news.
Boy, it's terrible. You know why? I'm going to tell you right now what happened.
Tell me what happened.
You changed the style
me?
Of the show.
It's
yes.
my fault?
Yeah. Let me tell you what happened. You took this show and you flipped it by putting that Tom Merritt guy
I screwed it all
at
up.
The beginning.
Should have put it at the
it's
end.
It's like New Coke.
And all of a sudden, the universe.
I blame the bobblehead.
And that didn't help, that Chris Perillo thing. And so the universe is having a fit.
According to T-Mo News,
as good a theory as any.
T-Mobile may be unveiling its new contract-free system later this month, as early as March 4th, going into effect March 24th. T-Mobile's CEO has been talking for some time about eliminating long-term contracts, going month to month, unsubsidizing phones, I guess. They rebranded themselves as the Uncarrier. They got a Jamaican guy, and he said, T-Mobile, it's the Uncarrier, man.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. They're gonna sell the iPhone. You may love your iPhone, but you hate AT&T. You're going to love T-Mobile. Will this be enough to save the number 4 carrier? Are they number 4? I think they are, right? Sprint's not.
I like T-Mobile.
Number 4.
They have a deal on T-Mobile that's $30 a month. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, pure price performance. It's great.
Yeah, and the quality of both the surfing and the voice is not bad.
You're using a Nexus 4 on T-Mobile? Unlocked Nexus 4 on T-Mobile?
This is a Galaxy Google.
Oh, it's a Galaxy Google.
And it's unlocked, yes.
Still no LTE. And the strategy in the U.S. for not subsidizing phones, not doing contracts has just not worked. I mean, Leap Wireless got the iPhone. I think
Leap has
starting
the iPhone?
With the 5.
Wow.
Yeah. Unsubsidized, so you pay $500 or $600 right. to get it, and they're not
Nobody's
selling
it.
Yeah, it's
people are surprisingly sensitive to the upfront cost, even though it's the month to month that kills you.
Yeah, I mean, Google took a shot at that too with their Android store.
Yeah,
and that flopped within 6 months. I think it's just not a model that works in the U.S. And yet in Asia and Europe, that's the standard.
I think American cell phone users have Stockholm syndrome. We've come to love our hostage. Takers.
I was never taken hostage. I've always used unlocked phones.
You used to use those cheap 7-Eleven Go phones.
Oh, yeah.
The burners. You
right, the ones you could throw away.
Yeah.
You can make your deal on the phone, and right in the can it goes.
Throw it away. I learned that on the wire.
Wipe, you got to wipe it first because they do whole fingerprints.
Right. Wow, this is really exciting.
What else?
The Nook. What's happening is Barnes and... Okay. I was always a little worried about Barnes & Noble, as a brick-and-mortar retailer in the face of Amazon. The Kindle is killer. Barnes & Noble created the Nook. Now they're saying year-over-year, 25% drop in e-book sales at Barnes & Noble.
Why don't they sell their e-books to work on the Kindle? They'd sell more books.
25.9% e-books and devices in the quarter.
They're getting killed
26.
By Amazon.
They're
That's
getting
the
killed.
Yeah.
And the co-founder of Barnes & Noble, I read recently, was saying, I'd be interested in buying back Barnes & Noble, but I don't want the Nook. You guys can spin out that division and hang on to it.
Well, Microsoft put $300 million into Nook.
Yep.
That lost?
I don't remember that.
Up. Yeah.
Why?
That was one of the questions many asked at the time.
Huh.
Now we're really wondering.
So there's been a call recently for Steve Ballmer's head, and I think it's louder than it said. You're a Bloomberg. You should notice this. I think it's louder than before. I think they're really they're really going after him.
I don't get the sense that it's at a fever pitch right now, and like you were alluding to, it's been happening for the last 5 years at least.
Yeah, I agree with that. But it seemed louder to me.
Windows 8 for sure, and the Surface will be pretty important. If he makes it to next year, the Xbox 360, whatever the next Xbox is, will
these pictures of Ballmer? He should get a public relations person to get these things.
He's been
off
working
the
on a music video career. I think you should watch this. This is something Ballmer is doing with Taylor Swift, I think. If the Microsoft thing doesn't work out.
Yeah. He could
be a little something he could
backup
do.
Backup singer.
Horace is saying, why did I do this show? I should never have done this show. Horace, you have a show on the 5x5 network, don't you?
Yeah. There's a backup. I got a backup plan.
We're going to take a break. Please, John, I beg of you, find a story that will galvanize this audience, panel, get us talking.
That's what the problem is. We have a dead audience.
They're dead because we're dead. It's because I put the Tom Merritt commercial in the wrong spot. I know it. You're right.
I always thought he was, until today, I swore that he was always alive.
That gave it away when he said, thanks, Leo, even though I didn't throw it to him.
Yeah.
That what gave it away?
I think so, and I never noticed this before. I'm
Our
stunned.
Show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. They've added something new. Mm-hmm. So we had Mr. Dandy in here. He's the guy who made this lovely Leo bobblehead doll. And we were telling Mr. Dandy, he has a Squarespace site at MrDandy.com. We said, what you got to do is you got to upgrade to the Squarespace e-commerce. You could sell these things directly.
They have an e-commerce thing
going
on now?
They now have. So Squarespace, we've talked about it before.
Do they take credit cards?
They do. It's the best hosting.
Do they process?
Yes. They don't even take a cut of the processing.
What?
Yes.
Well, that could be
PayPal.
Are
you interested now?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I'm going to check
PayPal.
This.
Well, you know, get out of that.
You know, the noagendashow.com uses...
$24 a month, Squarespace Commerce, e-commerce.
Squarespace.
They'll set you up with a merchant account. They take no cut. Just $24 a month. That's a really good deal. For hosting, plus the best content management software. You could try it right now. Just to go to squarespace.com. You don't need a credit card. Just use our offer code. Actually, they won't even ask for an offer code. They just set you up for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, take a look at what you get. Squarespace's pricing has always been aggressive. Again, remember, this is hosting plus their content management system, mobile responsive, beautiful designs. The e-commerce is just one of the three packages. You get the basic package, $8 a month when you buy an annual plan. It's $10 month to month. $16 for the unlimited plan. Now add to the unlimited plan commerce, and you get $24 a month. You get a fully integrated e-commerce solution for physical or digital goods. They give you coupons. You want to do coupons, codes, inventory tracking, tax. They calculate the tax for every state.
Oh, that's good.
Every region.
That's going to be very important.
Huge, right?
Yeah, it's a waste of
everyone's
time.
Amazon was pretending they couldn't figure out
but
how to do it.
You still have to submit the money. What about that?
They do the whole thing.
Do they submit the money to the states?
I don't know. You should ask them. It doesn't say.
It doesn't sound like they would.
Well, maybe you could do that.
It's a lot of work.
Write a check.
It's a crock. The whole idea that I should be selling something in California to something in to someone in Louisiana
well,
and have to send them. Oh,
don't collect
that's your
and,
idea.
And let the Governor Jindal come to your home.
Yeah, he probably would.
Squarespace offers this with no limits on the number of pages, galleries, blogs, no bandwidth limit. You will never get a bandwidth bill. So if you suddenly go viral, no big deal. Unlimited
That'll
storage, and you can never bring a Squarespace site down. Really great system. And boy, with the e-commerce, what do you want to sell? Candles, dolls, digital goods,
voodoo dolls.
I tell you what, we'll get Mr. Danny to sell the Leo doll, and you can sell the pins. Right? It could be like a 1-2 punch.
Yeah,
I'll give you some hairs. Just, you know, because you need the full kit. You get the doll, but then you have to paste a hair onto it.
Is that right?
Poke it with a pin.
I don't know any of this.
Oh, you got to learn your voodoo. Hmm. That you do so well. Squarespace.com does it so well. Squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, though, would you do me a favor? Use our offer code TWIT3, because it's March now, the third month of the year, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, I heard that.
And you'll get to 10% off your first purchase. That's why an annual purchase is probably the best idea. You're going to save the most money. The e-commerce truly is amazing. Really incredible what you get for very affordable. I hate to say it, but you know all those other like Shopify and all those guys are in trouble. This is so much better.
And you're probably right.
Just a correction on the ad. You use a merchant. They set you up with a merchant service through Stripe, and Stripe does.
Oh, Stripe does.
Yes.
Oh crap.
Yes. So it's
Stripe takes.
But
it's a
very
cut.
Competitive. It's okay. Very competitive.
Well,
so.
So you're not. But okay. But like,
do you have to
Visa
to
and MasterCard
or?
Would anyway. So this is in lieu of or in addition to the credit card's fee.
I haven't researched it that much.
That's just the credit card fee. That's normal. You'd always have to do that. I think. Well, anyway, you know what? We'll find that out.
Why don't you start selling those mugs? You sent me a couple of mugs. I want to thank you. The one that came in unbroken.
Did the rest of them come broken? Yeah. See, we're going to do it ourselves.
It's that little one.
Yeah, the little one with the tea, with the spoon in it.
Broke. It's a million pieces.
The spoon weakens it.
I don't like that one anyway. I didn't really care about that one. But the other mug is intact, and that's what I cared about.
So Einhorn has dropped its Apple lawsuit. Again, I'm picking really great stories, folks. Really great stories here.
The shareholders are looking for more money back.
They want cash. So Apple's got it. Shareholders want it.
Yeah, and they deserve it because the shareholders are really the owners of the company.
What could Apple possibly do with, what are they at, $120 billion now?
Something like that or more.
Something insane.
It does seem that if they wanted the shareholders to buy into the idea that maybe they're going to do something with the money, they should spend some. Instead of just accumulating it, right?
Yeah, just hoarding.
Horace, where should Apple spend its money?
Well, I could give you a simple answer, and I think that would be capacity in manufacturing. But I think they're doing it already, but they can't spend enough. They're putting in about $10 to $12 billion a year in equipment to manufacture things. So this is mostly fabrication equipment fabs, as they say, in either displays or maybe some of the semiconductor stuff they're doing with in Taiwan.
So you're not talking about cutting out Foxconn? You're just manufacturing new types of processors?
No. Foxconn, it's a misconception that to think that Foxconn is a big part of the value chain. Foxconn, the labor components are generally quite low. They're like $3 to $8 per phone. The semiconductors are, you know, $100 to $200 a phone. That's where the real costs are. And so in order to really solve the problem of capacity and the problem of scale, they need to really double and triple production every year. And so the problem is that right now a lot of that is held by Samsung for microprocessors, but they need to somehow find a second source. And it takes years. That's the other thing you have to appreciate, is that the orders that are going in now for production are probably going to be product shipping in 2 years from now, because you've got to build the plants, you got to build the lines, you got to test everything. And so you know whatever was shipping in the fall was probably designed for manufacturing in 2010. About 2 years
later. It's similar to Intel, right? The same issue for Intel. They have to plan way ahead.
Absolutely.
So is Apple building fabs?
Well, someone else owns the fabs, but Apple buys the equipment that goes into the fabs. That's the most important and most expensive part of the fab.
Right.
But as far as the building and the labor force and the regulations and dealing with the governments and the permits, that's the partner's responsibility. Again, we're talking about some of the components. Samsung probably does not get funding from Apple for its equipment. But I would imagine Sharp and others in Japan are getting it right now. In fact, that's, I think, already been declared. But we're dealing with numbers. Like, just keep in mind that Apple spends more on CapEx for manufacturing than Taiwan Semiconductor. And they're about a half of Samsung's level right now.
They spend more than Intel. You actually, it was a real eye-opener for me when you did that analysis on Asimco.com of capital expenditures by Apple. They spend about $8 billion a year, more than $8 billion.
Yeah, it's over 10. And on a quarterly basis, they overtook Intel, but it may not be on a yearly basis.
Okay. And way above other software or companies like Amazon or Google or Microsoft.
Right, because they don't need fabs. They would be spending it on infrastructure, and Apple has its own, right? This is the servers and the data centers. But those, you know, I would imagine Apple spends 10 to 20% of its CapEx in that area, and they do declare that they do make those investments. But I want to point out one thing that I think maybe also is not being observed right now, and it just came out actually in the news this week, is that increasingly there are now semiconductors being built into the connectors, right? So I don't know, you guys probably already heard about this. This is the Lightning adapter that comes that you
it's
can
got
buy.
It's got an ARM chip in it.
Right, and it's the same processor that the iPhone 1 had. And this, so this
in
this,
the connector?
Yeah, there's a connector. And not only that, but it's got 2 gigs of memory.
What?
Yeah,
three
and it boots a kernel of Unix, and of course it's OS 10 Unix, and it has to boot, and it's upgradable, so you can actually do a software update to the connector. And so the thing you have to so this is the old one was a pass through. There was no intelligence.
This is not for all ARM connectors. This is for their video connector.
Yeah, the HDMI.
The
out,
digital Lightning AV adapter.
Right. Yeah. I understand that the reason is that it the Lightning connector is serial and HDMI needs to be parallelized, right. So they need to somehow create the signal from a certain encoding to another. But the interesting thing to me is that you imagine the intelligence or the processing power you need to embed in all kinds of things. Now they're moving processors not just into phones, but now we're seeing processors entering into peripherals and into actual connectors between peripherals. And each microprocessor has to be built by somebody, and the memory has to be sourced. And this is just going to be at the point where we're not counting computers like we do in terms of units of laptops or PCs, and you know, like Gartner would, we're going to see intelligent processing going on in all kinds of things that we don't think of as computers. And someone needs to build that stuff. And the control points that you're going to end up with, who has the capacity. I'm giving a talk actually next week asking the question if the ecosystem wars will actually be won and fought on the factory floor rather than amongst the developer community. That's a very interesting question. I don't know the answer to, but I think it's something we need to start exploring.
And there are some advantages to Apple to making these connectors so smart. Of course, that means others can't make cheap knockoffs of them. The guys at Panic who discovered this ARM chip in the connector speculated maybe that the connector could be AirPlay capable, which is a wild idea. You wouldn't... I don't know exactly which way that maybe you would connect. I don't know. You wouldn't need a device.
Okay.
This is a computer.
Uh-huh.
It's a connector. It's got a 256... megs of RAM.
I would hook a keyboard to it.
I remember going into a computer store, and the guy was saying, you know, what you really need on your Windows PC, it's probably Windows 95, maybe Windows 3.1, is you need 8 megs of RAM. You got 2 megs for the operating system.
You talk like this guy?
Yeah, 2 megs for the app. You got 2 megs for your RAM drive, and then 2 megs for your cache. That's 8 megs. And I thought, oh, no one's ever going to have 8 megs in a computer. This...
You were in Boston?
Connector, yes.
This happened?
This connector has 256 megabytes of RAM in the connector.
Wow.
Oh, now you're impressed. I think that's pretty bizarre.
Seems like it needs a gig.
You got the Raspberry Pi, right? That's a huge phenomenon.
Right.
It's the same thing. I mean, and that was done by a bunch of amateurs or hobbyists.
Is anybody here, do you have a Raspberry
Pi?
We
have Raspberry Pis here.
Do you have one?
Yeah, somewhere.
You have one?
Yeah. Do you have one, Horace?
Horace, you got one?
No, I don't. I don't.
What would he do with a Raspberry Pi?
He'd throw it at somebody's face.
Not that kind of pie.
Oh.
No, they just cracked 1 million Raspberry Pis sold.
They cracked them?
That's, the number. They pushed they went through the ceiling of the number.
Was this a...
It's a bad verb.
Who invested in this company?
Nobody. It's Cambridge University.
This reminds me of the phenomenon. This is a repeat. This is a cycle. This is the old, remember the Sinclair 100?
Yes.
It
was very much inspired by that.
$99
yes,
computer that didn't do anything.
Well, Raspberry Pi does something. You can run Raspberry Pi as a media center. In fact, we did a know-how episode a couple of weeks ago putting there's an XBMC version for Raspberry Pi. You put Pi MBCS, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
XBM Pi. I don't know what you call it. You put that on there and you've got a media center. On a $35 Raspberry Pi.
And then what do I do with this media center?
You put it on your TV. Now it's your smart TV.
Can I get Netflix on it?
Yes.
Through the media center?
Yes.
Through the Raspberry Pi?
Yes.
Huh. So I don't need a boxy box?
It's just like a boxy box.
Is it just like a Roku?
XBMC and the boxy box are the same software. It's not like it's like a Roku, but it's
so I don't need a Roku?
Source. No, you could replace the Roku with this. There's people making Android sticks to do the same thing. They're very inexpensive.
I'm going to meet with the Roku CEO and find out what's going on.
Well, I have to think that the low end is kind of eating away at his business a little bit. And then, of course, we just see that LG just bought part of WebOS. Did you see that?
Yeah.
For their smart TVs. I think that's kind of neat.
WebOS?
Well, they need an operating system. Most of these TVs, to my knowledge, use Linux. I guess is WebOS... based on Linux?
See, this is what's got to happen. Apple has got to bring out a TV just to save the mess that we're getting into with all this kind of crazy stuff.
No,
going
this
on.
Is
they
all good.
Standardize.
This is let a thousand flowers bloom.
No.
Web-based for a TV does not make a lot of sense to me. I mean, the applications would need to run in a very high resolution to look good on an HD TV. And
you mean WebOS is not capable of that, or?
No, there's no native applications for WebOS. I mean, it's
LG would have to write
in JavaScript.
I see what you're saying.
And
it's web apps. You're right. Yeah.
Okay, someone in the chat room came up with, oh, no, it's better because it's open source. And I disagree. I think open source only works when there's a model for it to copy. That's why Mozilla Firefox works, because they could copy IE and make it better. Just going crazy on open source, just out of the blue, roaming around aimlessly, all you have to do is look on the net and all these crazy projects that are going nowhere. There's thousands of them because they're not targeting anything. You need a target for this to work, as far as I can tell.
iOS or Android, which is more private?
What?
What would you guess? Don't look at the headline.
I would say the Apple iOS leak more. The apps leak more than the Android. Oh, wait a minute. It says what it says.
That's what it says. Yeah. There's a study posted by AppThority, which evaluates apps for companies, say that free iPhone and iPad apps from Apple's App Store pose a greater privacy risk than free apps from Google Play.
Somebody in the chat room called me on my little commentary right there saying that Mozilla predated IE, which I don't know if that's absolutely true. I don't think it is, but it's beside the point because they were targeting Netscape.
He's thinking of Netscape.
Well, Netscape predated Mozilla. Netscape was there.
Yeah, predated both.
Right.
Yeah.
He's thinking of...
I don't know what he's thinking. But the point...
Mosaic, not Mozilla.
No, no, he said that...
Mosaic predated.
Oh, maybe that's what he's thinking.
And that... Well, but remember that Mark Andreessen, when he was at NCSA, wrote the first browser. I don't know if it was open source.
Well, it was a team that wrote the browser.
Right. Mosaic was open source, was it?
No.
It was not. It was closed.
Well, I think it was. I don't know. I don't remember. Anybody in the chat room know?
You're just making up.
I'm just saying no and yes. I can't be wrong.
you're just saying whatever, you know, just making it up right as you
Yeah, go. I am actually. It's a shame. But it's come to that.
Groupon CEO?
Groupon CEO, Andrew Mason, fired.
So the guy who came up with the idea got fired, but Leonsis, or
Ted Leonsis from formerly AOL.
We all know Ted.
Yeah.
Ted's a smart guy. He might be able to fix it.
Is he the new CEO?
Yeah.
Co-CEO with that's Kosky.
It's always a problem when you got co-CEOs.
It's an interim, though. They're looking at...
Usually
looking
one
higher,
of them gets poisoned.
Oh, you're thinking...
Well, Agatha Christie, at least.
You're thinking of the Medici's. That's a different thing. is Groupon a failed model?
It's not looking good right now.
I've never used Groupon. I mean, I signed up for
it once, and they started, and because I was going to go to New York, and I decided, well, maybe there's something there I can pick, you know, something going on. So I signed up, and I said I'm going to be going to New York. And for years later,
never for the rest of your life,
they keep sending me stuff about New York. I don't live in New York.
They're going to go bank. They're going to go bankrupt, and you can still get those emails. They forever.
I buy black using my fantastic email system from ctyme.com. I just put it in a click the box and it got blackholed.
The real issue with Groupon is the cost of the sales force, right? You have to have local salespeople everywhere you are, and that gets very costly, does it not? And difficult to manage.
Yeah, there are also questions from the retailers about the model, about whether
retailers are pissed.
Yeah, whether it actually converts customers, which is the whole appeal of doing a Groupon, or whether it just gets bargain seekers who come in for the one-off and never come back again.
So we're going to see a pivot, are we not?
A pivot?
A pivot for Groupon.
Well, they've already taken a step into selling goods.
Yeah, Groupon goods.
You know, being more like Amazon.
Like more like fab and fancy more than anything, right? More this idea
deals.
Of curated e-goods. Mm. Yeah.
Curated e-goods.
Andrew Mason's goodbye letter was pretty insane. If anybody,
yeah, let's hear it. What did Mr. Mason?
I'll pull out a.
He blamed.
Quote here.
He blamed the analysts.
Analysts,
I'm sure.
Let's see. After 4.5 intense and wonderful years as CEO of Groupon, I've decided that I'd like to spend more time with my family.
Oh, actually, boo!
Boo!
Nobody should ever say
next
that.
Next line. Just kidding. I was fired today.
Oh, good line. Okay.
Good.
All right, well, that's pretty.
That's good.
A little later on, I'm okay with having failed at this part of the journey. If Groupon was Battletoads, it would be like I made it all the way to the Terra Tubes without dying on my first ever playthrough.
That's a pretty awesome resignation or firing letter.
He's got like tons of money. He can say whatever he wants.
He's got a big exit.
Not a big severance, but he made plenty of money while he was there.
Yeah. Some thought it was a scam. Was it a real business?
Well, seems so. I don't know. It went public. It's got the scrutiny of the securities people.
That's when it all went downhill, wasn't it?
Well,
then quarter after quarter of bad results, it kind of starts to fall apart. Samsung will be showing its Galaxy S4 in a couple of weeks, March 14th.
These guys crank them out.
It's official. Come and meet the next Galaxy, says the invite.
How come you didn't go to Barcelona?
I should have gone to Barcelona. Everybody
else
did.
Instead of doing this show
anywhere but here. I wish I were at the IHOP down the road right now, actually. Barcelona is Mobile World Congress. And it was, you know, I thought there'd be more announcements there. It wasn't crazy with announcements. We did, Samsung released an 8-inch tablet, the Note 8.
And that's going to be used as a phone, too.
They have phone on it.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello, Mom.
But that's, it turns out nothing new for them in Europe anyway. But in the U.S., they haven't put phone software on there. But you know me. I like that idea. I like big phones.
Yeah, you do.
I cannot lie.
Yeah. Like
thank you for the gratuitous.
There's a bunch of,
do you notice, by the way,
million gags
that
in there.
Half the audience has actually walked out now?
They snuck out. I think they all snuck out.
At least one of them jump out a window there.
And that window doesn't open.
Yeah, well, he's laying there dead.
March 14th, 7 p.m. Eastern. Come and meet the next Galaxy. I'm sure it will be the S4. What else, right? And there's been a lot of rumors about what the S4 will be. Galaxy S3, huge success. 30 million sales in 5 months.
Jeez.
You know, a real credible competitor to the iPhone. And that's just one of a fairly broad line of products.
What about the Note 5?
My next phone is going to be the HTC One. I'm really looking at that right now. It looks beautiful.
You have a different phone every 2 months.
I love that about my life.
What are you rocking right now?
A Note 2.
It's a big note.
It's a big note, but I'm ready for
it's a
something.
Huge clunker.
Yeah, you keep that in a satchel or like a fanny pack?
Keeps
yeah.
it in a...
Yeah, wear a fanny. It's not that big. It fits in your breast pocket. It's not that big. I like it.
Or a merch.
This will be the first time I've gone backwards. I usually go bigger and bigger, and going to the
you usually
HTC
go bigger,
one,
then you go smaller.
Yeah, it goes
that's
and
common.
Comes and goes. Yeah, with my age, it gets smaller faster.
Well,
but the new one is 4.8 inches, so that's the one I'm going to go with.
Huh.
You got to love this. The judge in the UK who told Apple, you must apologize to Samsung for implying that they copied you, has now taken
they
a job.
They did copy
him. No, but in the UK, Samsung won.
Okay.
And
still copied them.
The judge ordered Apple to publish a notice on its website saying the Galaxy Tab did not copy the registered design for the iPad. He has now been hired by Samsung as a patent expert.
Well, I guess it's cheaper than hiring him as an expert witness time and time again.
I thought this only happened in the U.S. That's pretty bad.
Motorola also hired Guy Kawasaki as a consultant.
I saw that.
This past
Guy's
week.
Guy hasn't had a
Guy's
job
a
in
gig.
Ages.
What's it?
He's been writing lots of books though.
He's been big on e-books. He wrote a book called Ego about e-books, how to make money in e-books.
Didn't he write
buy my book?
How to use Google Plus?
He wrote a book
something?
On Google Plus, which was an e-book, and that opened his eyes to the idea of making money in e-books. So then he wrote an e-book about making money in e-books.
Right.
Which is usually what happens.
And the next book is about how we made money on e-books.
It's when you see those ads for, like, send me a dollar in an envelope now and I'll tell you how to make money in business
right.
online. And what it is now you get a bunch of people to send you a dollar in an envelope.
Yeah, and then you say, that's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
The same way I just screwed you screw everybody else.
Yeah, it's fantastic. That's American
hey,
way.
A
what a great country.
Yes, Horace, please.
You just said that he was hired by Motorola. At what point do you decide when you're working in that company whether you're working for Motorola or for Google?
Well, that's a really good question. Google doesn't seem to really want Motorola. John, you said it was the patents. It wasn't the handsets.
That's what my understanding.
They did try to sell. They've been trying to sell off the set-top box. I think they did sell off the
maybe
set-top box business.
Which makes no sense if you think about it.
I thought that was a real opportunity for Google.
Yeah. Google wants to do a set-top box, apparently.
Well, the division specialized more in sort of cable boxes. Like
but that's
having
but
deals
that's,
with the cable company.
But that was to me that was the opportunity because all these cable companies have been buying these crappy Motorola, you know, set top boxes. Maybe Google could have said, hey, you know what? Maybe we could make this a little better, put Google TV on here.
Yeah.
You've already got a business with us, deal with us.
Had they tried to put Google TV on there, all of the cable companies would have cut the
they
deals.
They would have said no, it's too expensive, we don't want
I mean Google's approach to TV so far has been go around all of the media.
Yeah.
Cable companies, the broadcasters, and
Guy is going to reinvigorate the Motorola brand.
Well, maybe he can.
Yeah.
This would give him something to do.
He's going to focus on product design, user interface, marketing, and social media.
He's going to do Mr. Moto. They had a Moto thing, remember?
Oh, yeah, Moto.
Hello, Moto.
Hello, Moto.
That was a terrible campaign. But
it was the worst.
By the way,
the best campaigns where they had the dog and all these kids, the dog that buried the phone. Remember that one? Remember seeing that?
That was awful. And then they did the droid thing, which scared you about your phone.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I don't want my phone to be a scary robot.
Right, I agree.
That was a that was Verizon's doing.
Actually, it's all
on that
so
that
more Verizon. It's also Kawasaki can write another book.
By the way, Kawasaki's book is not Ego; it's Ape. I apologize. I don't know why I thought it was Ego. It's Ape, and I can't remember what that stands.
One time
for.
I did.
I don't know why you thought it was Ego.
I don't know.
One time, I did a speech with him, and he was came up to the stage after I was there, and I said to him, "You know, guy, we got something in common." He says, "What?" I said, "Conflict of interest." Nothing.
he didn't get it.
That
was kind of fun.
I stole a seat once at a conference. That's my only interaction I've had.
No, I love Guy. He's a good friend, and he's been on our shows many times, and I think he's fun. His book is called Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur. That's what Ape stands
for. Oh, Ape.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. And it's actually, I've recommended it to people. It's a good book.
Why has it got a gorilla on the front?
One of the things he says is your ebook has to have a good cover.
It's an ebook.
Well, that seems counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, because normally good covers are designed so when you're walking through the bookstore, you go, wow.
But think about what the bookstore is now. It's Amazon, right?
Yeah, but...
So one of his points in Ape, which is 300 pages long, so it's not like a lightweight tome.
It's non-trivial. What's the font size?
It might be big. I don't know. One of the things he says in Ape is that even in an online bookstore, the cover makes a huge difference. And he actually did some testing and stuff. Makes a huge difference in sell-through.
Mm.
You really do need to pay attention to that, even though you're right. It's counterintuitive. You'd think not.
Well, he's probably right. He's an expert.
All right. We're going to take a break. Only another half hour left. Thank God. This show brought to you by...
Also, here's the other thing.
Yeah?
You had the other show on, and it drained all your energy.
I think the other show drained my energy. It did.
Yeah, this is a problem. You're working yourself to death.
I'm working myself to death.
Yeah, you're going to have to pull back. Pull back. Delegate.
Or I'll just have this little guy do some of the show. The show brought to you by GoToAssist. Are you in IT? No, you're not. But I'm talking to the audience at home. Are you in IT? Do you have to support computers, maybe software? GoToAssist is a must-have for the IT professional. Visit GoToAssist.com. You can learn all about it. It's from Citrix. Of course, it's well-designed. You probably have used the remote access module. In fact, for the last 10 years, GoToAssist remote access has been the number one choice for IT professionals for remote access. It's huge. But they've recently added new features that make this even more valuable. They've added a module called remote monitoring that lets you track everything in your customer's network. This is how you're going to turn into a managed service provider. Somebody who can really deliver on support. So you install the crawler on your client's network here, and it will go out. It'll find every bit of hardware and software. And then you set up the dashboards to track performance, network performance, even things like how much hard drive space is left, toner, cartridge, everything. They have some pre-customized dashboards, but you can also build your own. And you can get alerts from instant messenger, email, text. Very powerful stuff. Then you go in with a remote access and fix it. And, of course, you can track the problems with their new service desk module. Easy to easily manage and track and resolve issues. You've got change, release, and configuration management. Your customers will use this, too, with a beautiful branded self-service portal. It's very nice stuff. So let me get you to try this. If you visit GoToAssist.com, click the Try It Free button, and use our offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. You got 30 days of GoToAssist. All three. They're going to ask you which modules. Little pro tip, click all three. It's free. And I think you'll find uses for all three of them. They really, really go hand in hand. GoToAssist.com. Use a promo code TWIT. We love Citrix, and we thank them for their support of GoToAssist. Our guests, Hara Stedio of asimco.com. You just had your conference in San Francisco, right? It's over.
Yeah, we did. January 30.
Are you going to do another one soon?
Yes. No later than 6 months, I think. And we're going to do it in London.
Oh, how nice. How fun. So it went well.
Yeah, very well. We were we were hosted by IBM. It was in their Watson Research Center. Almaden Research Center.
Yeah.
And it was great. Great venue. Great people. We just talked a lot about the history of Silicon Valley, the history of California, and the history of the Asian tigers, and whether the frontier of innovation is moving east or west, I should say, well, back east, if you will.
Wait a minute, back east. Okay, to the east.
Well, the far east, the far east.
Right.
So the that's one of the themes we wanted to explore.
Did Watson cook you any food?
He's cooking now.
Yeah.
I love that. So this is the same computer that won the Jeopardy.
Yep. Now he's crunching culinary data and coming up with meal recipes.
That is, to me, that would be a challenging thing for a computer to do. If a computer could cook, could be a... So he's not obviously cooking.
No, he doesn't
He's making recipes that others will cook?
Yes.
New recipes.
Well, so
example,
for IBM's investor meeting that just happened on Friday, Watson came up with Spanish almond crescents, Australian grilled asparagus, and veal croquettes.
Wow, that sounds really good. Now, these aren't others' recipes. These are Watson created.
Watson came up with this after crunching a lot of data.
That seems to be a good AI challenge.
Chemical compounds.
Yeah, it is, because it can't work.
And human preferences.
Can't work.
What if?
Because when you're creating recipes, you're tasting stuff, and you're making combinations in your head in such a way that a computer can't possibly do, because it's never tasted anything. So the real problem with this, the computer doesn't care if it tastes good.
Yeah, but what if it could get data that said, okay, everybody said this tastes good.
Yeah, like these ingredients taste good. So for the Spanish almond crescents, Watson wanted something that combines saffron, pepper, honey, and chocolate.
Oh. No, that sounds good.
Oh.
That sounds El Bulli good.
No, it doesn't. Sounds horrible.
That's what he does?
He finds
five completely disparate ingredients.
But he's also working on trying to fool you, kind of trick you.
Into liking
Nobody's
it?
Ever said that his food is good. It's just it's interesting.
Michelin gave him 3 stars. That sounds like he's good.
No, the restaurant's fantastic. I mean, they have like 3 staff members for every guest. I mean, it's closed now.
Have you been to El Bulli?
It was losing. No, I missed out. He ended up closing the place because they were losing so much money that nobody could afford to keep it.
Which is interesting because they were getting 1 million reservation requests a year for 8,000 slots. How could you lose money?
He was losing money because he really couldn't charge what the food was worth.
That's the problem, right?
Yeah, it's already costing you thousands of dollars. You have to pay to make money, you'd have to charge $10,000 a meal, kind of thing.
He should have. Then he wouldn't maybe get 1 million reservation requests.
Or build a bigger restaurant.
Yeah. I'm sad that I didn't get to. I would have liked to have gone.
I know 2 people have been.
And?
I say it's the most interesting dining experience they've ever had, but the food wasn't necessarily that good.
It was interesting. Not good, but interesting. It was in Madrid?
No, it was in the Costa Brava in the southern part, or the over by Barcelona. So
where did Adria go? I mean, is he going to cook
somewhere? He's retired.
He retired.
Oh, no, wait. He's doing, this is hilarious. I think he's working for Coke or Pepsi. No, seriously.
What he should do is go to work for IBM. I really like this idea that a computer, I think they're smart to do this. They beat the world chess champion with Deep Blue. And then they say, okay, now it's all calculation. So chess isn't a good challenge because it's calculation. So now they're trying to say, what is the difference in calculation and thinking? And they go to Jeopardy, but it's still very fact-based.
But that was a scam and a fraud, Jeopardy thing. It's a timing.
They
think it hit the button faster.
And they got the questions in advance?
Yeah, because it needed some time to crunch everything, so they give it a little extra time.
The whole thing was ridiculous.
Oh, that's not right.
But there's a thought
Do you think Alex Trebek had anything to do with that?
There's a thought that computers with humans, in other words, a computer and a human, could beat Deep Blue if they worked in tandem.
Well, sure. A human is better than a computer alone.
Right. And I'm thinking maybe with the recipe thing, it might be better if you had a real chef.
That's what I'm saying.
Working with the computer.
Mr. El Bulli should have gone there.
Well, he's working for Coke or Pepsi now, doing something crazy. Making snack food, I think. Seriously.
It's like Ratatouille.
Ratatouille. Get back to movie. Pixar. So the creative director, former creative director at Shy at Day, Ken Segal, worked with Jobs 14 years. He was like his guy. He put the eye in the iMac. That's like on his car. I put the eye in iMac.
Somebody had to.
He's guided the Think Different campaign. So they asked him about Apple's ads currently. He said, Apple's advertising history is as famous as its products, but something has changed. While you could still argue that Macs and iDevices have a ton of appeal, you can't argue that Apple is still untouchable when it comes to advertising. The fact it is being touched often and effectively by none other than Samsung. And I'd agree. I think the Samsung ads, I'm not sure about the unicorn riot.
No, and they've been playing that a little too much, too.
Yeah.
The Samsung Safe, the Enterprise, Samsung Enterprise.
Well, that's what
ads.
They're pushing, right?
Yeah, I didn't see this commercial.
The unicorn game. I think it's a series of ads, too. It's not all
a long series of ads. Mm-hmm. Also, the Super Bowl ad was a little weird where they brought in a couple of actors.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
It was a little strange. But I loved the ads of the people waiting in line. And then mom and dad show up.
I mean, you put those against the Siri ads with Zoe Deschanel and Martin Scorsese. Those aren't very good.
No, not at all.
Plus, and I think Segal mentions this as well, it's clear Samsung's way outspending Apple. You see those ads. In fact, that may be the one flaw. You see those ads everywhere all the time.
Yeah, and Samsung is spending internationally, whereas Apple tends to focus on certain markets with its advertising. Yeah, Samsung is definitely outspending.
He says Apple is feeling a bit like Obama after his first debate with Romney. It deeply believes in its ideas. It just needs to express them more forcefully.
This is guy Norman Mailer. What's the deal?
I don't know. He's probably trying to be, you know, he's retired.
Oh, this, you know, Philip.
Yeah. I can't disagree with him. And now Samsung, talk about copying. They're doing the new wallet app looks just like Passbook. It even has a similar icon. It seems odd. They announced this at Mobile World Congress. It's called Samsung Wallet,
which is the same name as the Windows Phone 8.
And Google. Wallet. Google calls theirs
Google
Wallet,
right? Actually,
I guess Wallet, you can't trademark Wallet, maybe.
Mm.
There's the two icons. They're on the left, Apple's Passbook icon. On the right, Samsung's wallet. Both of them have tickets in a pouch. Right?
Yeah. I don't understand why they can't.
Why can't we just get along?
Be a little more creative.
It does seem as if Samsung...
But is that Samsung or Android?
That's Samsung.
Samsung.
Okay. So they did this themselves.
Yeah, for Samsung phones. You know, that's the big thing now is to really make the distinction between Android, a generic Android, which you've got on your Google
phone. The great thing about this, by the way, since it says Google on the back, it always gets upgraded immediately.
That's not true, by the way.
I got 4.2.2 on here.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
But it's not a guarantee.
Great. 4.2.2.
Should be in one of those ads. I like what Tweetbot did. Tapbots, which makes the Tweetbot app, which is a kind of an expensive app on the Macintosh platform. I think it's
$20?
$20, something like that. if you pirate it, and this is an issue if you're a Twitter client, because Twitter only gives you 100,000 tokens or twice what you have already got signed up. So in Tweetbot's case, they probably have far more than 100,000 tokens because they have been around for a while. So... I don't know how they know if you're pirated, but apparently if you pirate it, then when you first sign up, they suggest as your first tweet, I've been demoing a pirated copy of Tweetbot and really like it, so I'm going to buy a copy. The funny thing is...
They make you tweet this?
They don't make you tweet it. They just, you know how you get, when you first get it's your first tweet, they suggest it. You could cancel, but apparently...
It's like Hello World.
Yeah, but apparently pirates are not the brightest, maybe. Because if you do a search for I've been demoing a pirated copy of Tweetbot, you get a lot of tweets. They just go, yeah,
they're all
sure.
From Arabs.
Okay. Well, no, this is
no,
one
look,
of the things you
these are all
there's
Arabs.
A lot of Arabic, yeah, but it's not just Arabic. But this is one of the things you realize now with Twitter, it is an absolutely global phenomenon. You see non-Western
China.
Characters. China, there's China. Japan. There's some more.
Remember
Arabic.
The original days of Twitter when there was you could click one of these little icons and it would give you all the feeds coming in at all the time.
Yeah, it's changed a lot.
And it would be flying global by. Feed.
Yes.
Global feed.
Just imagine.
App.net still has that.
They can.
Yeah.
By the way, they're doing a free version of App.net. Limited number of tweets or whatever you call those apps. What do they have a name for what they call App.net postings? It's not very memorable, obviously. I've been demoing a pirated copy of Tweetbot, and I really like it. Let's look at all of these.
It's disgusting. I mean, this thing
that is brilliant.
Jump the shark.
No, I just think that's a great way to shame people who have been stealing your product. What am I doing? Oh, I keep doing the wrong key. I've been opening a million tabs.
Just poke at it.
El Bulli.
Poke, poke, poke. There you go.
Look at that.
It's not doing anything. And every time you poke, the whole thing shakes. You don't find that annoying? That's why they have that kickstand on the surface, because it won't shake. This is like shakes.
I'm shaking my laptop.
It's terrible. Look, it just crashed.
Went to a new page. Internet Explorer 10 now available on Windows 7. Aren't you excited?
Oh, let me get
quick,
a pen.
Quick, run and download that.
I got to get it when I get home.
Yeah. Improved JavaScript performance and a focus on battery life for mobile PCs. I don't know why that...
You should... Yeah, well, how much battery life does a browser chew up?
I don't know. Is Twitter worth $10 billion?
Nah.
No. That's an easy one.
Yeah, we're done.
Just say no. Not even close. Who thinks Twitter's worth Well, BlackRock.
BlackRock?
BlackRock Group just put in a big investment, giving them a private market. It's not public. Private market valuation of $9 billion. Wall Street Journal's Dennis Berman.
Aren't those the guys who are the mercenaries in Iraq? Oh, Blackwater. I see. That's right.
Rock beats water. I guess if somebody's
water
willing to give
rock.
You... water should be rock.
Yeah.
But water's not in that game. You know, it's scissors, papers, and rocks. No water.
You know, there's a professional league of that game.
I guess if you were really good at sensing, like micro changes in facial expressions,
you could see the bluffer,
you could probably see what's. You'd probably be very good at that. Mm. I wonder if Watson could do that. Maybe Watson shouldn't forget chess. Right. Rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, onward.
Your job, John, but you went and ate an orange instead. Was to find a big, exciting.
So I go.
How about you? I got one. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, I'm not going to say anything.
Did somebody tell you that I was wearing a blue plaid shirt? Is that why you're wearing a blue plaid shirt?
This is not blue. It's blue-ish. I actually have a blue shirt, one almost like that one. I almost wore.
I thought you were bluish. There was something about you. Marissa Meyer says, if you're working from home, screw you.
Oh, yeah.
You got to come back to the office.
I wrote a column about this.
I would Market too.
Watch?
Is this bizarre? Yeah, Market Watch.
I think it was in PC Mag.
This is bizarre. What is the story here? I have a theory. This was a rare act from Marissa of unmediated pique. That normally I would think that she would get frustrated, get angry, and then go, but I'm a CEO and I'm gonna
you
handle
think she
this
was...
more appropriately. I think she got pissed off.
About what?
About people working from home and not doing anything.
Oh, they got people in the office not doing anything. Why doesn't she deal with that?
And I think she got some metric. Somebody said, hey, by the way, Marissa, we got 53 customer service agents working at home.
Looked
and,
at VPN data to see how often.
And they're actually
on
Facebook.
Doing any work.
And she got pissed off and wrote a memo saying, you can't work from home anymore.
When everybody knows that working from home is a more productive way to work, it's been studied to death, and just because these people aren't doing their job by working from home is not...
Well, just fire people who are not doing a good job.
Yeah,
it's a strange thing, and I don't think it's a big deal in the sense that I think it's obviously a mistake, and they're going to change their mind, but it shows an unusual crack in the facade, I think. I think she just got pissed.
Will they be punching clocks now?
Yeah, what's next?
Yeah, they should have a big thing of time cards. Ching, and put it in the little rack. And then the big scandal will be the guy who punches in your time card.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
No, that's what you want. The guy comes in before
cover
you
for
do.
Me.
He covers for you by punching you in, and then off you go. You stay at home.
What do they call that when you ride on somebody when they open the door with their card key and you ride in after them.
Yeah, it's called riding in after.
Like, tailgating?
Tailgating. There must be a name for it. Probably. Tailcarting.
Drafting.
Drafting. It's the same
it's
idea.
A Mario Kart term.
Well, it's kind of.
Tailgating. It's called tailgating.
Yeah, that's what everyone says.
One of the bits of irony from the story was that Marissa Mayer had built or had built a nursery in her office.
Yeah, she can work from the. She doesn't have to work from home. She's got a nursery
with
in her office
and probably a nanny
and
to
a couple
go with
and
it.
A nanny's working around the clock.
Yeah, well, she's a billionaire. She's got multiple residences. She doesn't care that people really can't afford to live in Silicon Valley. She's an elitist.
Some people, there was some speculation that this would save money because those people would quit.
Well, they probably will.
Well, a lot of them apparently were hired with the idea that you don't have to come in.
They may be coders.
And now they're saying you've got to move to San Jose and hang out here?
Yeah. No,
I figured they're going to quit. We won't have to pay unemployment.
Yeah, I mean, Sunnyvale is not the most ideal commute for somebody living in San Francisco or somebody living in the North Bay or the East Bay.
No, it's terrible.
People all over the place, right? Time Warner Cable says... You know, this Google Gigabit thing, nobody really wants that. We have determined there is no consumer demand for Gigabit either.
Yeah, idiots. We attend, you know, we can do one,
hey, that
one
makes
megabit
it so.
Per second is good
that
enough.
That makes it so. We're in the business, says Time Warner, of delivering what customers want, and they don't want speed. The last thing they'd want.
All they're doing is they're defining their own customers as out-and-out idiots. Our customers don't want it because they're stupid. That's what he's saying.
This is Time Warner's chief cable, Time Warner Cable's chief financial officer, Irina Estevez. We're in the business of delivering what customers want and stay a little ahead of what we think they'll want. But we just don't see the need of delivering gigabit to consumers.
Yeah.
I mean, it does depend on the price.
Yeah, at $1,000 a month, they're probably right.
Yeah.
But how much does Google Gigabit?
By the way, that's probably what they asked the question. That's how they placed it.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Would you pay $10,000 a month for Gigabit Ethernet?
No.
And anyone says, no, our customers don't want it.
They don't want it.
Yeah.
We asked them.
Comcast charges, or at least when the 100 megabit per second service came out, they were charging $105 a month. For that, sir, who's going to pay that?
Right,
for
but
home
Google
internet?
Gigabit, I think, is really like $35. Cheap, right? Is anybody in watching living $70? Says Jeff,
$70.
So, yeah,
for
$70
now,
a month.
So, I ask you, Time Warner customers, would you pay $70 a month for gigabit? By the way, it's not just gigabit down; it's gigabit up.
I'd take it, and I would pay $100 easy.
I'd pay $100.
Well, somebody said on the chat room said they'd pay $300.
Everybody in the chat room saying yes for $70. Of course you want it.
Yeah,
I'm paying $70 now for $15,
right.
And $15.3.
In Kansas City, Google, you know, said you can't have this unless everybody in your neighborhood or some percentage, 80% of the people in your neighborhood sign up, and it was universally subscribed to. Apparently, people in Kansas City wanted it.
Everybody wants it.
I love it. That's a good business model. Just make up what your customers want if you don't want to give it to us. We're going to take a break, come back with more, and then we'll find out why Square was slapped with a cease and desist by the state of Illinois.
Square.
You know the charge card thing, Square? Charge with Square?
Yeah, that little thing.
State of Illinois didn't like it.
Why, you didn't get a piece of the action
probably.
In the corrupt state
I'm
of Illinois?
Guessing, I'm guessing
me?
It would have something to do with that. Mm-hmm. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, audiobooks. The best audiobook distributor in the world, over 100,000 choices. And if you go to audible.com, you can get one free right now. Are you making funny sounds with your lips? What is going on here? This is good. I typed in audible.xom and Google said, oh, you mean audible.com. That's exactly what I did.
You didn't even spell audible right.
I spelled the whole thing wrong and Google knew. 100,000 plus titles, an amazing deal, and what great books. I am such a fan of Audible.com. Let me log into my Audible account. I noticed a lot of the books they recommend on the front page are books that we've recommended, like Life of Pi, which was one of my favorite audiobooks. In fact, I don't want to see the movie. It was such an experience. I loved it so much. They've redesigned, by the way, the Audible page. So if you're an Audible customer and you haven't been to the new webpage, I think you're going to like it. It's cleaner. See how I can see two credits available in big letters. And What a great salt, sugar, fat, how the food giants hooked us by Michael Moss. I got to read that. The Vatican Diaries. Ooh, a look behind the scenes at the power, personalities, and politics of the heart of the Catholic Church. That'd be good. Right now, it's timely. What are you looking at?
You're not a Catholic.
No, but I think it's Don't you think it's fascinating? It's medieval. I can't get enough.
I'll get that one and listen to it.
Would you do that for me? How about this one? It's just right for you. Strong hot winds. Irish Johansson.
Really?
It's almost as if they knew.
A cheap shot. It's beneath you.
It is, but I couldn't resist. When I saw the book, I said, that's John's. Well, here's the thing. You're going to choose two books. So you could make that one of your books and then the.
Nah.
Mm-hmm. Strong Hot Winds. It's probably a romance novel. Let me just read the description. 4 years ago, after Corey Brandell's passionate affair with Sheikh Damon El Karim ended, she gave birth to his son and kept it a secret from the Sheikh.
Huh.
When Damon finds out the truth, he kidnaps the boy and takes him across the world to his desert kingdom, knowing that Corey will follow. This sounds good.
Yeah. Totally.
Until now, Corey never understood Damon's loneliness. But is she strong enough to give him the enduring love he needs? Or Carnal Innocence by Nora Roberts.
Oh, yeah, Nora Roberts.
I like Nora Roberts.
She's a moneymaker.
She's a moneymaker.
I don't care much for her.
Yeah. Well, The Hunger Games.
What about them?
Good book.
Really, you think so?
I haven't read it, but it's on my list. I actually downloaded it. I just haven't listened to it yet. What I'm listening to now, you all know because I've talked about it, because it's a really, really long book, is Patrick Rothfuss's Name of the... Well, I first listened to The Name of the Wind, now I'm listening to book two of the King Chronicles. Did you finish that yet, Chad?
Haven't finished.
It's long.
Yeah, I'm chapter like 27.
I know, there's a lot of chapters. And I'm 41.
Like, yeah, I'm not even like a fourth through.
I know.
But that's my favorite type of book. Such a you just get book. Lost in it.
You do. Or how about this? Duct Tape Parenting, a less... is more approach to raising respectful, responsible, and resilient kids. God, I hope it doesn't involve duct tape.
Yeah, no, it totally involves duct tape. I know about this book. It's mostly about how to tie the kids down.
No.
Yeah. And then you put them in a chair, and then you put the chair in a closet. I don't recommend this book for anybody.
No, I don't think it's a good idea. Actually, I don't think that's what it's about. Anyway.
I could be wrong.
Here's the deal. You want to get a couple of books for free. Audible.com/twit2. You'll sign up for the Platinum account. That's 2 books a month subscription. First month is free. First 2 books are free. Cancel any time in the first month. Pay nothing. But those books are yours forever. You get to keep them forever. And the new Audible apps, I have the Audible app now on Windows 8. It's really great. Windows phone, iPhone, Android phone. They've just updated the apps to a clean, slick look to match the web page. They're doing nice stuff. Audible.com/twit2. Your first book is free.
They're looking like Windows 8.
It has kind of a... Well, it's just clean. It is a little Windows 80, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
It's clean. So these are my next 3 books. I've already got them in the cart. Jerry Pournelle's The Gripping Hand. That's also a child-rearing book, I believe.
I thought it was about something else.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's not how not to have children. That's probably what
that's what it is, yeah.
Audible.com/twit2. All right, we're going to wrap this up. A couple of quick stories. I've done Tom's The Week Ahead. I've done the promo. That's really...
Maybe you do Tom again. It would reset the show.
Maybe I could reset it.
You should start over.
Yeah, you wouldn't mind if I started the whole thing, would you, over again? Square has been slapped with a cease and desist order by the Illinois State Department of Financial Regulation. The Transmitters of Money Act. No person may engage in this state in the business of selling or issuing payment instruments, transmitting money or exchanging for compensation, payment instruments, et cetera, without first obtaining a license.
What does that got to do with Bitcoin?
Under this act. Somebody sent me a Twitter that said we should accept Bitcoin as payment.
We have the same harassing people doing that to our show.
The Bitcoin is now at the highest value it's been ever.
$33 or so.
Yeah.
But you can't really do...
Well, you can buy pizzas with Bitcoin. There's a website.
What pizza? Yeah, there's a pizza in Wisconsin.
No, I think it's Domino's.
Wait a minute. Oh, great.
No, well, it's a portal.
Bitcoins, you won't get the
it's
pizza.
A portal to right. It's a portal to pizza.
It's a pizza portal.
It's a pizza portal.
What would so pizza so so
WordPress takes Bitcoin subscriptions.
Really?
You can pay for subscriptions with
subscription
Bitcoin.
To what?
To WordPress.
Host what do you mean? What subscription to WordPress?
Host it for more space and.
Sometimes WordPress takes money.
Here.
Pizzaforcoins.com.
You want to say hi to Mimi?
Hi, Mimi. How are you?
I didn't turn her on yet. Here.
Hi, Mimi. It's Leo. John said he just turned you on. That's John's wife.
Yeah. I don't know why she's calling me while I'm
Mimi,
doing the show.
John's on the air right now. Don't bother us.
Now she's apologizing profusely.
She's hanging up. She just hung up.
I didn't know.
I love
so
Mimi.
Sorry.
Your wife is an awesome person, and she doesn't get enough credit.
Okay.
A new website devoted to your hunger needs, but only if you're in the mood to pizza. Going back to the infamous 10,000 Bitcoin for pizza back in 2010, a system for ordering pizzas with your Bitcoin. You choose your pizza company. You can get Papa John's. I bet he likes that. Pizza Hut or Domino's. I don't have any Bitcoin, or I'd try it.
This is not a quality product.
Is Chad, are we missing the boat? Should we be accepting Bitcoin?
Well, I was thinking about it the other day, and like,
I don't know what I'd do with it.
Well, I mean, you have to use it just like a credit card because you have a credit card number, and that could be associated like
right.
A Bitcoin.
Number, by the way, it's this
yeah, because it's,
number.
It's crypto. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, unless if everyone takes it, then it. So it's almost like the social network problem where everyone yeah. has to be on it, otherwise right. it's not useful. But it's not useful until everyone's on it.
It's just a matter of time before the state of Illinois sues the pants out of
you guys have the right audience for it, though.
Oh, no. I'm sure there's Bitcoin yeah. miners
okay.
out there.
Okay.
Right
how many people in the Bitcoins. Audience use Bitcoin?
Ah. Hey, there's a guy. Where are you from, sir?
Take one of the discs.
He's from San Francisco. Notorious.
How many
notorious
Bitcoins do you currently
Bitcoin
own?
Bitcoin hangout.
Ooh, he must have a lot.
He's got a big Bitcoin.
He's got a stash of
Did
Bitcoins.
They solve the... Because there was a problem with people stealing Bitcoins. They've solved that issue, right? He says you can easily steal
Bitcoin.
Oh,
well, that's no good.
Huh. Yeah. Okay.
It's not right.
Horace, what are you writing about for your next blog post on Asimco.com? What's hot for you right now?
I'm looking at the iTunes economy. I think the fact that Apple switched their reporting about what used to be called the music business. It's now called iTunes, and they folded in the Apple software division because that Apple software now is sold through the iTunes store anyway or the Mac App Store.
For the longest time, Apple said, oh, this is a loss leader. We don't make any money on this. It's just a way to add value to the Apple platform. They've gone beyond that, haven't they?
Well, my reckoning, I mean, they reported about $13 billion in revenue, so some of that is not some of their gross income is not reported because it's actually on the agency model. But I think that they're upwards of $15 billion a year now in terms of transaction value going through the iTunes store. And that is a significant number that we should be looking at more closely and understanding where the costs are. Because if indeed they're collecting 30% of all the transactional value, then and if they're breaking even on that, then you're looking at a cost structure in, you know, $5 to $7 billion. So that is significant amount of money that is going to something internal to Apple. I think they are making money, so I don't think it's all going into the server farms. But it's still a question from a competitive point of view: is this something that an alternative, entrant or contender for this for being an ecosystem provider? Are they looking at the same investment level needed, billions of dollars needed to
it'd,
be in
It'd
this
be
game.
Reasonable for Apple to hide that information because that's the kind of thing.
Indeed,
it's a
like,
lot of money that's in there, and if it's cheap to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Google's own, Google doesn't report a lot of its costs either, so we don't really know what it costs to run Google. But it is interesting to think about also, because we're down to probably three major players, Google, Amazon, and and right. Apple were in the content business today or content distribution. And what that's going to do to the future of not just apps and music, but, you know, increasingly the TV space is going to be folded into this. So there's a lot of interesting thing also is Eddie Q that runs this business. I mean, he has to deal with five different industries. He has to deal with people coming from book publishing to music publishing, music labels, app developers, and they all have different expectations, different ways of looking at the world and what their value add is. And so somehow it all has to be resold through this channel that is iTunes. So I'm very interested in looking at the economics of it, the competitive structure. How easy is it to enter into this? How easy is it to compete? And the data is beginning to come together. That's the interesting thing. You can start to back out the crucial figures that will give us some answers, hopefully. So I'll be writing more about that.
Interesting. Here's your best guess that it's somewhat profitable, wildly profitable. It's certainly not a break-even business anymore.
No, but I think that they're mostly going to be profitable from software, from their own software. So we have, my expectation is they're running at about 17% operating margin. So 15 to 17% on $17 billion is a lot of money. I think they're going to go over 20 actually in 2013. Mm. So it's profitable, but not on the as a margin. We're not looking at anything near the hardware businesses right. they have. But it is certainly above zero, and also the whole business is growing at a solid 30%, and that is something you can try to extrapolate, and it starts to look really, really interesting.
If you wanted to take over from Apple, though, you know, I mean, they've been so successful at building this closed ecosystem, it's more than just, you know, the issue of can we make money at it. It's how do we get in there? How do we get a foot in the door?
Well, I think first of all, this is selling other people's content, so it's not about open or not. I think Google and Amazon are doing similar things in terms of offering a palette or a portfolio of media types. I think the interesting thing is whether. Whether the app model, which is actually one of the biggest chunks, it's about 15 billion downloads per in 2012, whether that app business is going to go more web-based, right? I mean, that's the big question. But right now, developers are still finding it lucrative to do native code, which means, the closed model, if you will. And certainly Google is right in there. Amazon is as well. Maybe Samsung will get into this game. I think from a competitive point of view, that's really the question. If you're as big as Samsung is now, think about the fact that they make more profits from Galaxy than Google does for all of its business right. today. Samsung is a bigger player than Google, period. And so the question is for Samsung, what's next? Because they've said, you know, hardware commoditizes. They know that. They've done it to others.
That's intriguing.
So how, you know, the Chinese are coming and Huawei and then ZTE are both gunning for that same spot that Samsung has today. So they have to become an ecosystem player. And it's not just about forking Android. They have to attract developers. They have to attract media companies. And they would have to be looking at these numbers about, you know, what does it take? Where do you make the investments? The lead times involved. I mean, iTunes is you know, it's been around since 2004.
Well, and many have taken a run at it. You look at Sony, which has taken many runs at iTunes and never succeeded. And they even own a record company.
Exactly. I mean, here, you would have thought Sony, with all of its consumer electronics legacy, could make a dent in there, but they weren't able to. So, and Sony, by the way, was also disrupted by Samsung,
that's
you know,
right.
in the TV
that's
business.
Right. Yep.
So it's really an open question, I think. And I'm not sure, again, what the answer might be, but I think that the first step is to understand what's going on. And there isn't enough scrutiny right now of the iTunes business as a business. I think it's still seen as, you know, like you said, a break-even thing that sustains the hardware business. And Amazon is seen as sort of being actually very clever and innovative in terms of giving its hardware away so that it can make no margin on content sales. So I'm not sure what the wisdom of that is, but the point is that Apple is doing that to some degree here with its TV business. It's giving away the Apple TV. Essentially, it's not a high margin product while it's actually trying to generate content sales as well. So there's sort of like I think of Apple TV as sort of Apple's Kindle.
Yeah, they. I think it's such disinformation when they say it's our hobby. whenever Apple says something like that, don't look over here. No, there's no profit in the iTunes. The Apple TV is just a hobby. That's the first place you should look. That's a big red flag. Yeah.
Tim Cook has started to change the messaging on that a little bit, saying, you know, we're going to keep pulling the strings. We think that there's something here. But, I mean, you just look at their performance with the Apple TV. They obviously haven't cracked it yet.
Right.
I mean, they're selling well by many standards within. I mean, it's the leader in that tiny over-the-top set-top box market.
I think they're sandbagging the Apple TV.
Ah. I don't think so.
I think they are, because I think they've held back on the one thing that really would put it over the top, which is apps. And they're holding on to that. And I feel like they're keeping it a hobby.
So what are they doing?
They're going to pull the trigger, but I just have a feeling they've got a long-term plan.
The trigger is going to be cancel it. By the way, just as a side note.
Yes. You like my watch.
You have a watch here.
Yes.
That's a $10,000 watch.
No, it's not.
All right.
It's a little less than that. It's a nice watch, though, isn't it? You know,
it's
what I found
big
out
big and clunky.
Yeah, it's really big, and I bought it because it was big. Because I thought my phone and my watch should be equal size.
And what else?
and then I found out that the inside of this is commoditized. That the works are based on what is effectively like a CPU that is sold to many watch manufacturers.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
No.
Okay, thank you. We got to thank everybody for being here, especially you, Horace Dediu. You put up with us for a long, long time. Where are you located?
Well, I have a home in Finland. I'm actually right now in Boston, however.
Oh, good. All right. I was worried you were in Finland, and I thought, oh, my God, it's like 4 in the morning.
You're keeping the guy up all night.
The northern lights are going, and you're missing them. But no, Boston, nothing. Nothing's going on.
Nothing going on.
Nothing going on. Thank you very much, Horace. Really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
We're ASYMCO.com, certainly the place you should go. And we also encourage people to listen to your podcast on 5x5, which is called?
The Critical Path.
The Critical Path, and really is fascinating. Really good stuff. Both the writing on InSimco and the show are great. 5x5.tv, The Critical Path. Thank you very much, Mark Millian, for joining us from Bloomberg Business Week. What are you working on this week?
I just got back from vacation, so I don't have a whole lot going
rested,
on right now. But
relax.
I'm catching up on
last week,
Hawaii to Kauai.
Nice, very nice.
It was awesome.
Yeah, yep. That's why you're not wearing any shoes.
Yep.
Nope.
Got the
very relaxed.
Got the sandals. Now,
John C. Dvorak, nice to see you once again. Tomorrow, you and me, we're going to be Statler and Waldorf to the radio industry.
Yeah, we're going to blow their minds.
Look, I hate radio. I don't know what we're going to say. It's
I know what we're going to say.
Yeah, good.
Not really.
No, because
you go up.
You know why?
Analyze. This is going to be ad libbed, but it's not going to be ad libbed because we've given enough speeches.
Thinking about this for years.
Into one of these patterns.
Absolutely.
And boom, we nail it.
And then we go have dinner. Where are we going?
The Village Pub.
Okay.
Now here's the deal.
Yes.
So what we want to do here?
Yeah.
Is they're giving us X amount of time. We have to run over.
Oh, absolutely.
At least 10 minutes until they panic.
Yeah.
And then they start, you know, oh God, get them off the stage.
You want to see a lot of this?
Yeah, a lot of that.
A lot of wrap it up. A lot of
And somebody, and then the key is, you know, you've got them when the woman that's always going to be the one doing
it. It's always
this,
yeah.
She's going to be up on the stage, inching toward us,
and there'll be the Jaws theme. Then they'll cut our microphone. It'll be just like the Oscars.
That'd be cool.
We do
play
us off. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, right after the hot new This Week in YouTube show. we're trying something. We're trying. We'll see. With Lamar Wilson, we're doing a kind of a YouTube. It's fun, I think, you know. 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. Or 2300 UTC at twit.tv. Congratulations to our friends Brett Rounceville and Katie Robinson got married.
Yeah, yeah, they're big fan. They're big friends of NSFW show.
So why am I doing this on Twit?
Just they're big friends of the whole network. And
they're big friends of the whole network. Anyway, congratulations, Amtrekker and Katie Moe. Where did they get married? Somewhere lovely and beautiful. Where?
San Jose.
They got married in San Jose.
Lovely San Jose.
It is the garden spot of the Southern Peninsula.
Yeah, oh yeah. San Jose, that's the place to go.
Mm-mm-mm.
It's a destination wedding.
Not Sunnyvale. Now, Sunnyvale, I might mock.
Well, maybe.
But San Jose's got a lot.
It's going to have the 49ers shortly.
That's right.
Northern Santa Clara. I'm not sure.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. I hope. What? Anything? No?
Tickets at twit.tv.
Tickets at twit.tv if you'd like to join the rapidly dwindling crowd.
You need tickets
There's
to get in here?
There's five people left.
You need tickets?
No, we just like to... We want to know how many people are going to be so we can put out seats and get you a piece of pizza.
You got like 100 seats and three people here. Come on.
It's plenty of room.
What happened, by the way, when this show first started out...
It was huge.
It was packed and always packed. This afternoon it was packed.
It wasn't even like, you're not talking 1995, you're talking this afternoon. And then as we talk, there's seats.
Well,
we
got to do this. Slow.
We
got to
get Oscar, like the seat fillers that they have for the Academy
Awards. Right, they
kept
rushing in.
We need seat fillers.
Yeah, they actually pay them.
No, I can't do that. That would be, that's too much. Thank you. Burke is filling a seat.
Takes a seat. Good man.
I'll join you next week for another fabulous episode. Now, ladies and gentlemen, another twit is in the can. This is